This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Did you ever watch The Twilight Zone? Oh, God. Remember The Twilight Zone with Burgess Meredith? Remember, he loved to read, and there was a nuclear war, and he had no friends anyway, and he was down in the basement of the library. Yes, he was the last man. He broke his glasses. Yeah. This thing freaked me out. When I was 7 years old, I bought another pair of glasses just in case that would happen.
Oh, those shows, they were so good. They were so scary.
Yeah.
Oh, great. They were great. Remember the one where the guy had the stopwatch? Somebody in a bar gave him a stopwatch, and he was this real obnoxious guy, and he took the stopwatch, and he hit it, and everybody else in time froze but him.
That's an Outer Limits.
No, that was a zone.
That's an Outer Limits.
It was a zone.
Oh, they had one about the mannequins that got 2 weeks off and turned into humans, and they were allowed to go out and shop for 2 weeks on their own, and then this one came back, and it was over 2 weeks, and the other mannequins went, come over here for a minute, and turned her into plastic.
Boy, they were scary. They were great.
I loved it.
Hey, you want to see something really scary?
You bet.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, this is really, really scary now.
I trust you.
Okay, pull the car over.
Pull the car over?
Ooh. You want to see it?
Well, show me while I'm driving.
No, I can't. I can't tell you about it. It's only take a couple of seconds.
All right, 2 seconds, okay?
Okay.
What is it?
Just pull it over.
Okay.
I'll show you.
All right.
Okay.
Scare me.
Are you ready?
Okay, go ahead. What are you doing?
It is 21 minutes after the hour of 1 in this, the month of October in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. High above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, the place from where all good things come. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to join us on today's program. 503-505-6964, if you would like to weigh in, engage with us telephonically with your comments, questions, clarifications, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, excoriations, lectures, screeds, threats, just a lot of heavy breathing, maybe. It's 503-505, or just one following the other, you know, like real over and over. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. You can also get a hold of us via Skype directly if you would like. That is Rick Emerson Show. That is the Skype username, Rick Emerson Show. The text box is open as well. And plus, for you folk who are back in 2004, you can email. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor can be reached at Dawn. That is D-A-W-N at dawn@rickemerson.com. Or you can just hang outside the studio door and wait for her to leave. Not in a creepy sort of putting her head in a camera bag kind of a way, more in a Mr. Darren, can I get your autograph kind of a way.
Don't do that.
No, I'm just... What, don't hate the people.
I don't hate the people.
After they go and they get you Viso. That's right.
He was very nice, but he wasn't just hanging around waiting for me.
I didn't think I was going to go there. And then I went there. We'll talk about all that here in a second. It's 503-505-6964. As we plunge on into today's program, it is Friday the 29th, so it is Friday before Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Silver Shamrock. And so forth. We got a snuff watch coming up. That I'm so glad you know that. Because otherwise it would just be me over here doing that, and I would just sound like a retard. Snuff Watch coming up today. Taser Watch coming up today. Religious Nutcase Watch coming up today. It's just, boy, howdy. Stupid Criminal of the Week on the way. Mr. Aaron Duran from GeekIntheCity.com will be in the studio with us later on. He will be counting down the top five scariest video games of all time. The top five most fear-inducing, most terrifying, most unnerving, most dread-inducing video games of all time. That is Aaron Duran. He'll be doing that later on. We'll talk about the Geek-O-Lantern contest here in just a minute, and then at the end of the show, we'll be announcing the winners of that. By the way, you go to geekolantern.com. That is just like it sounds, geek-o, like o, lantern.com. It is geekolantern.com, and you can see, I think all the entries are up there, and it's just, I mean, really, just the amount of brain power, the amount of synapses that I had. I mean, I basically had to shut down all my autonomic functions last night. I wasn't even really able to do the systolic, you know, motion in my trachea. Just the peristolic.
Were you able to swallow your Triscuits and spray cheese?
No, I just had to. I had to insert them rectally.
Oh. We've been talking about your butt an awful lot lately.
Well, look, you got to give the people what they want, even if they don't really know it. Even if it's a thing that they can't admit to themselves, Dawn. Sometimes people crave that which they can't embrace openly. It's part of our Puritan society. I blame Catholics. All this time last night, we were just talking about this before the show. We got all these entries for the Geek-O-Lantern contest, which are just freaking awesome. I mean, they're just fantastic. And I mean, it's just, you know, we're not one of those, like, you know, you guys are the best. You're way better than that audience that we saw last night. We wouldn't say it if it weren't the case. It really is just, it's just astounding. And I guess it doesn't surprise me. Because, you know, it's like best audience ever and, you know, so forth. So it's not like I didn't expect them, to really step up to the plate and really get these, you know, make these things as well as they did. But I just wasn't sure what kind of entries we were going to get or what the manner of submission was going to be. But it's like as soon as we saw the first one, that was like the Kim Jong-il thing, which is just great because, like, who would ever do that? I mean, it's just insane and bizarre and fantastic. You know, and then the opposite end of the spectrum, the next entry is just like your femur. and then we had Douglas Adams, we got the Iron Giant, and we got the Joker, and we got the
R2-D2.
The R2-D2, and then somebody sent me like this long-ass explanation about the difference between the goblin and the green goblin and the hobgoblin.
Yeah.
I guess. And this is not the hobgoblin, it's the green goblin, and that was clarified. This is the second reference to this movie in one day. It was clarified as being the same Green Goblin that is on the front of the truck in Maximum Overdrive, the Stephen King opus. So you go to geekolantern.com. You can see all those entries. By the end of the day, we will have picked our grand prize winner, who gets a $100 gift certificate to thinkgeek.com, and the other winners who will receive shiny baubles from that same company. Don't forget, this is good through Sunday night. So this ends Sunday at midnight. If you're shopping at thinkgeek.com, use the code word Emerson when you check out. That's Emerson. You get, I think it's $5 off a purchase that is, I believe it's $25 to $49, and anything $50 and above, you get $10 off. You just use the code word Emerson when you check out there.
And they have so many wonderful, awesome things there that you should go there just to look and to drool and to go, oh my God, I had no idea I needed this, but now I do.
I mean, and just adding stuff. I mean, it sounds like a game and they go, we're adding things every day, but it really is true, to the point that I have to, I mean, and I want to knock them, you know, because we're partnering with this and whatnot. But I have to limit the amount of time that I spend there. Like, I can only go there like once every couple of weeks, because otherwise I would just, like, I'd end up just sending my paychecks there.
Yeah, I get, I'm on their mailing list and I get the newsletter like once a week or something. It's like, here's the new things we have in our shop, and I'll look at something and then I'll click through to it, and the next thing I know, 45 minutes have passed, and I'm still just like cruising through their site, going, I need a titanium spork.
Here's the thing about,
why don't I have this?
The thing about Geek is like the Sharper Image, but in an even better way. I mean, they really have they really have nichified themselves to an even greater extent than Sharper Image did. They have the knack for coming up with things that don't, I mean, look, let's be honest, that they have in the real world very little practical use, but they have enough practical use that you can lie to yourself and say that it's actually, you know, it's going to save you time, money, stress, whatever. That really, I can't afford not to buy it, honey. I mean, they sell this thing that you can attach to any faucet in your home, And what it does is it's difficult to explain, but it angles these sort of, I guess they're LED lights or whatever, but it angles some LED lights directly under the faucet, to the actual point where the water comes out. But the upshot is that the water glows. The water is colored when it comes out. And if it's cold, it's blue. If it's the hotter it gets, though, it turns purple and then it turns red. So, A, it's cool, you know, especially because they show the guy doing it in like a darkened bathroom. They're like, in the middle of the night, you won't have to guess where the water is. Like you've ever had to guess where the goddamned water is relation-wise to the faucet. It's in the faucet. That's the thing. But they also say, they don't say this, but this is like I imagine Ron Popeil going, how many times has this happened to you? And then you put your hands into what you think is cold water, and then you just pull back smoking skeletal stubs. You know, say, oh no, you burned all your skin off. Never do that again with the Think Geek thing that lights up your water like an idiot. You know, and you know, it's like $19. And you say to yourself, well, God, I really don't want to burn all the flesh off my hands. Honey, do we have $19? Oh, sure we do. Click.
And you also start thinking, and this will be so cool when people come over to my house
yeah.
and they go to use my bathroom and they go, oh, the water is glowing blue.
Yeah.
You're so cool. Yeah. They have things that are like useful in the dorkiest way possible too. Like one of the things we're giving away is the TARDIS USB hub. So it is actually a USB hub. You plug it into your USB port, and then it gives you like four USB ports so you can plug additional USB things in, except it looks like a TARDIS.
Yeah.
It's so cool. One of the things I've always wanted to get that they sell is a USB coffee warmer.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
It's
just a little miniature hot plate. Just the
powered
size
by your computer
for one cup of coffee that to sit next to your computer. Yeah, and it's powered by your USB.
You know who are nuts for those things are the Japanese. I was actually watching this thing. The Japanese, they've got there's a company in Japan now. I mean, maybe they got it here too. Where this might actually be from that company. Where all they do is they just create like home and kitchen and whatever appliances that all plug into your computer that are USB powered. Watch this. It's a blender that's USB powered. Well, why would you ever want that? Well, the thing is, you don't until you get it, but then you can reverse engineer a reason why you need it then. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. One of the great things about this show is I love that we are able to talk about this thing and we get like a deal with them and they give us things to give away as part of our prizes and they're partnering with us and they're a company that we would be sitting here rhapsodizing about anyway.
Yeah,
we'd still be talking about them even if they weren't giving us any
what
crap.
I'm saying.
So,
you are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program brought to you by The Cleaning Solution. Mr. Michael Beatty, the owner and proprietor of that fine firm, 971-533-3211 is where you can reach him, 971-533-3211. We will talk more about The Cleaning Solution later on the program. Also in the program, Snuff Watch, Taser Watch, Religious Nutcase Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week. Aaron Duran will be here with the top five scariest video games. Counting down the top five scariest video games. Again, we'll talk about the Geek-O-Lantern contest. You go to geekolantern.com to find out more about that. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
A teenager goes berserk over the size of his steak. A couple go to court to try and keep the city from neutering their dog. And a survey finds that most troops don't mind serving with gay soldiers.
Bob Barker is not amused, not by the gay thing, but by the neuter thing. Mm. And so forth. It's 5:03. That was weird. You just did like a little... Was that you arching an eyebrow at me?
Yes.
About what?
I don't know. It was one of those... kind of a... I'd be giving you the big okay sign if I'd had my hands free.
Okay. That was like maybe I had something in my teeth or whatever. How you doing today?
Stoned to the gills on Vicodin at the moment.
Really?
So, yep,
you didn't
yes.
tell me that.
Yeah, well, you remember I had that thing where I said I was felt awkward about doing something in front of you because then I knew you would, like, mock me and give me a hard time about it?
I thought that was the other thing.
No, and then I did it anyway, but you didn't pay any attention to what I was doing, so I don't think you caught what I was doing. I've had this horrible sinus headache since yesterday, and I had taken some ibuprofen, and it didn't do anything, and I don't have any, like... you know, sinus pills specifically for it. But I do have some Vicodin. So what I did was, because it was horrible and we were going on the air and, you know, we were going to be starting the show soon.
Uh-huh.
And I really wanted to make sure that my headache went away. So I sat here and I took one of the Fun Employment Radio shot glasses and I ground up a Vicodin. I just pulverized it into powder.
I think that's
here
question
on
number
the table.
Two on the list, by the way. Yeah.
And then I took the Kettleman's card that Brock gave me what he
and we'll get to that here in just a second.
And I used it like almost like I was like drawing out lines of cocaine, and I scraped it into the cap of the pill bottle, and I just like knocked it all into my mouth, and then washed it down with the tea I was drinking. And so now I'm just like
I don't understand why didn't you just take the pill?
Because it's a time release pill. It actually
Okay, this is questions
over
5 through 9.
A period of time. But if you if you grind it up, it goes into your bloodstream.
Oh, I know all about
faster.
Our friend the time release pill. Those are the ones that say on the side, do not crush or chew.
Right. Exactly.
Which, by the way, depending on what kind of person you are, what that means is crush and chew.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, anything, if they're telling you not to use the drug in a certain way, that means that if you do it, it must be awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't realize, see, I thought you were talking about something altogether different. By the way, can I just tell you, can Rick Emerson point something out? The other day, when I came in and I had that whole thing where my back just, like, disintegrated as I was walking up the stairs, you'll note that I didn't say, like, Don, you got some of them Vicodin over there.
I should have just offered that to you, and it didn't even occur to me.
No, because that's, you know, here's the thing. It's like if I had some Vicodin at home when that thing happened with my back, I would have taken them. You know, just because, you know, because that's the sort of thing it's made for. It is made for a pain that is actually so sharp or disabling that, I mean, really, that you just can't get anything done. Like, I was just sitting there in the chair, like, unable to move anything but my leg, you know, enough to, like, hit the space bar on the computer. I wasn't able to do anything else. That's where you really need Vicodin, where it's like, I got to be able to stand up, and I can't even move my legs. But then it passed. And so the next day, like, seeing him asking for him then, that would have just been, like, the horse is out of the barn, and the horse is in the next county, and, like, there'd be no point. Then I would have just been asking for Vicodin just to, like, have one around. But
yeah.
When you just said now that you right before we got on the air, you actually said, it's a weird thing to have a job where every time you do something, you're wondering if it's going to be talked about or made fun of on the air later.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even realize that at that moment you were like grinding, chopping, and then like effectively mainlining Vicodin.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that, by the way, somebody from like the landlord or the lawyer next door or somebody didn't go, hey, what's going on in here today? Special time. I'll come back.
Well, yes, I did it after Bruce Agler left. So it wasn't like he walked in and saw me like chopping up some kind of powder on the edge of the counter or something.
Let me just tell you, that guy's worked in radio stations long enough. It's like you could be sacrificing a baby in here and it wouldn't really matter. If you had a line of cocaine, he would just assume that a record rep had been here. You know, hey, can I get you to add the new Bieber? And also, here's a big bag of cocaine for you. So I thought you were talking about something else altogether. It was a little bit of inadvertent misdirection. So I want to take a moment and just talk about this great thing that happened before the show. A, because it's about like having the best audience ever. And B, because it's something you did that I can now make fun of on the air. See, so I'm sort of fulfilling your prophecy.
Hooray!
It's become a thing.
Serving my purpose here on the Rick Emerson Show.
So right there in my hands, I hold a CD and I hold a little plasticky card. And here's why. So it's been like forever ago now. It's been like weeks ago that we had this. We got a phone call from this listener named Brock. And Brock had called up the show and he was just like, you know, I answered the phone and I'm like, what's up? And he's like, hey, best show ever. So are you ever going to give away those bugles? I mean, you got them like a month ago and they've just been sitting under the table. What is up with that? And I just realized, like, by God, he's right, because out of sight, out of mind, and whatever. And that, like, the bugles had arrived, and then we'd stuck them under the table, and then just forgotten that they were there, and we hadn't done anything with them. And I said, well, you know, by God, just thank you for pointing it out, and just as a way for the Rick Emerson Show to say thank you, Brock, we're going to give you some of those bugles. And he, you know, I wrote down his phone number, because I could see it on the thing, and we get the little caller ID or whatever, and he sent me an email, and I had his information. And then, of course, then it became either a micro or macrocosm of this, depending on how you look at it. Then I just filed away his information and forgot about that.
Well, yes, but how many times did I actually say to you, so, Rick, did you mail those bugles to the guy?
Well, I never said yes. To be fair, I didn't lie.
No, you never lied.
I said, well, I'm getting on that. I'll do that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm doing that when I get home tonight.
I'll take care of that any moment now.
So did you do that? Oh, no, I didn't. Well, I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is like we were talking a while ago about, you know, you're sort of getting into the mode where when you're walking around the rest of the day, you know, after you do the show, you have to remember to, you know, if some observation or some small, nugget of amusement occurs, you got to write it down because you'll never remember it for the next day. Like, I got to talk about this on the show tomorrow. But if you don't write it down, gone out of your head. You will forget it. That's my thing. That's why I've learned that I have to put every single task into my planner, which has worked for me, you know, my whole life. But now that I've transitioned to the iPhone, I still don't always remember it. It's a thing. Because when I had the paper planner, man, it's like I'd say, got to do the thing. And I'd write it down, and bam, it was there. The iPhone, I haven't quite gotten into the swing of it yet. I'm like 80%. And so I'll like the Brock thing. I wrote it down, filed it away. And it's like I didn't write it. I didn't put it in my iPhone, so I just forgot to do it. So one day I log onto the Skype thing, and Brock is on there. And it's like you can put your status. You know, status is like, you know, online or available or sleeping or, you know, sponging off my keyboard or whatever it is. And his status was like, I swear to God, his status said, still waiting for bugles to arrive. And I just felt all this guilt. And I texted him right away. I'm like, sorry, I'm a failure. I can mail them. I can come to your house. You can come to the studio, whatever you want. And he was really cool about it. He's just like, he's like, well, why don't I swing by the studio? You know, he said, how about Friday? And I said, fine, come by like 11:15 or so.
And you, of course, had told me that Brock would be here today. And I completely, like, spaced on it and totally forgot.
See?
So I, like, showed up for work today in, like, a foul mood because of 47 different things that were going wrong with my hair uncombed.
Angrily stomping up the stairs. Snarling at everyone.
In a stained and torn sweatshirt. And it's like, look, here's this handsome man standing here. Who's, yes. Who's one of our... And I'm like,
slumping on into the studio.
Drooling on myself. Like,
Penguin always pays his due self. So Brock was in the he actually beat me here this morning. So he was in the break room when I got in, and so we talked. Yeah, he's a handsome and intelligent man. Mm-hmm. And he stopped by and I gave him the bugles, and he did that thing. And I almost hesitate to bring it up because then it just raises the whole awkwardness level like a million points. But somehow it has gotten into the audience's head, and I'm not complaining. That, like, they've got to bring stuff when they visit us. That, like, they have to bring gifts or something. It's sort of like...
And they don't.
Yeah.
They don't have to bring us gifts.
Yeah, you know, it's just like, it's like you're going to... It's like when Sinatra goes to see Joe Kennedy. You know, you have to bring him a whore and some booze or something. Like, you just got to. You can't not.
And then I always have that sort of, like, I'm, like, the bad Christmas gift person or something where it's like, I'm like, but I have no gift to give you in return. And they say something like... The gift of your entertainment is enough. And I feel like, no, it's just, really? Because you're actually giving me, like, a thing.
So it's like we had Laura and Steve show up a few weeks ago, and it's like they brought us the food and the dog treats and the whatever. And then, yeah, so Brock shows up this morning, and he actually brought us both, because he sort of talked about this in here, he actually brought us both gift certificates to Kettleman's Bagels, which is fantastic. And I said, oh, man, I said, you don't have to, you know, you're just coming to visit us, and I'm late with your bugles, first of all. You don't have to bring us anything. And he says, no, I feel like it's the least I could do. And it's like, I'm not trying to be dismissive of that. I mean, you know, I always say that, you know, we try to give the audience the best show possible. But I actually said to him, I go, you know, you realize you're actually paying us. Like, you give us like 32 cents. I should be giving you things, Brock. And anyway, so we talked, and he was very pleasant. And meanwhile, though, Dawn is just sitting in the studio like a dragon guarding a golden egg, just snarling. Just like smoke curling out of your nose, just going, hate everyone.
And he's like, here, I have this Kettleman card for you. And what do I say to him in return? Because I am so gracious and lovely.
I don't even know if it was words. It just sounded like a lot of snapping sounds.
No, I said, if only I'd had this 10 minutes ago.
Oh, that's right. Because you were sans viso.
Yeah, because I had gone to Kettleman's and apparently the magnetic strip on my debit card has decided not to work.
So your response wasn't actually like, thank you, or you're a pal, or what great listeners we have. It was, why didn't you get here earlier with this? I could have gotten some viso. And so Brock, charming listener that he is, actually just says, this is all this morning before we went on the Red Legion News, it was like 11:45. Brock, again, who has taken time out of his day to come here to the studio to get a prize that he won like a year ago.
And he brings us gifts that are worth about five times what we're giving him.
Yeah, the bugles are like, he could have purchased those for like $4. You know, and he's like giving his, you know, like gift certificates or whatever. And so after all of this, Don's like, you know, if only I'd had this Kettleman gift certificate that you're giving me, listener, 5 minutes ago, I wouldn't be so cranky. And Brock says, Don, what would you like me just to, would you like me to go down the street and get you a viso? And there was like a fraction of a second, it was like bullet time, like Matrix time, where it slowed. And I thought, what will Don say? It was like IBM's You Make the Call. He says, would you like me to go down the street and get you a viso, Don? And it was like time froze, and I was picturing the whole, like, what will Don say? Will she say, A, thank you, but no, I couldn't possibly trouble you anymore. B, no, thank you, I don't want to admit that I'm so helplessly dependent upon a chemical that comes in a can. Or C, yes, listener, go fetch me something else from down the street after having given me a gift certificate.
Time had slowed in my own mind at that point as well, as there was that fraction of a second where it was like can I go get you a viso? And then there's this ka-chunk as the next gear for, and I'm sitting there and it's like, and then I just go, yes,
you please. You actually just sort of, you said it as though he was offering, you said it like you had been wrongly convicted in Texas and he was asking if you'd like to be released from death row. Yes, thank you.
And then I was immediately like, no, I shouldn't say yes to that. That's wrong. But then I was like...
And then the best part is that you actually said... I could tell you were sort of trying to be less awkward about it because you actually said, well, Brock, if you're going to go get me a visa, maybe you could just use the gift certificate card that you just gave. And he's like, no, don't worry about it. So then he just goes and he buys it out of his own pocket and brings it back. Jesus.
And I'm just like sitting here all pathetic going, thank you.
I mean, we basically, I don't know. I feel as though there are moments where I feel like I'm going to wake up and it's going to be my mom telling me that I'm late for school or something because we fall into some weird alternate dimension. Where as much as we talk about the best audience ever thing, where it really just reaches like absurd proportions, like the audience, let's just be honest, the audience, every single one of them, they're all so much better as people than we are.
Yeah, I was going to say
in
that.
In every way.
They are so much nicer to us than we actually deserve.
Yeah, I mean, there's just no getting around that. All right. Well, anyway, so thank you, Brock. Sorry about the long wait for the bugle, but so there you go. So we gave him the three bags of bugles, and he was just all like effusive and like went off to face the rest of his day. Also, just so you can feel more awkward about things, let me check my email here. Wait, hold on a second. Let's see. I think that Tony may be, I think listener Tony may be bringing the candy corn by today.
All right. Oh, no, I couldn't possibly.
Yeah, I know. I know how you hate to turn down free stuff from listeners, Don. He asked, hey, can I swing by a little before 2? Well, I'll email him back and see if we can track him down. All right. Well, in any event, it's the Rick Emerson radio program.
You will like this candy corn, I'm telling you. You will like it.
It's 503-505-6964. Snuff watch, taser watch, religious nutcase watch, stupid criminal of the week, all on the way, including, let's see, we also got Aaron Duran coming in with the top five scariest video games. The Rick Emerson Show brought to you today by The Cleaning Solution. Mr. Michael Beatty owns and operates that business. You can find out more about them at 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. Let's say you have a Halloween party. Let's say you've got bags of bagels. Let's say you've got bags of bagels and a Vizo. Let's say you're staggering around the control room because you've got bags of bugles and a Vizo and you're swacked out of your brain on Vicodin. Let's say that one of you has a back problem and the other one doesn't have a back problem but has been snorting lines of powdered pharmaceuticals all the live long day. And then the next thing you know, something spills on the floor. God forbid. At that point, you're probably too high to operate, like, you know, the phone, much less a vacuum cleaner. But, I mean, if you're able to do that sort of thing, or you could just shout really loudly, maybe he'll hear you. Or put, like a cleaning solution signal up in the sky, like the map sign. Just like a stain sign that you project onto a cloud. And Michael Beatty from The Cleaning Solution arrives, and he will clean your carpet, your rug, your walkway, linoleum, upholstery, whether it's damage from pets, odor from pets, whether it's flagstones, tile, anything like that. Whether it's the space between the tiles, which is not like in jazz, the space between the notes, it's the actual space between the tiles. 971-533-3211 is where you contact him. The Cleaning Solution, a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson radio program. Who wants some news?
Me!
All right, here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Police in Victoria, Canada, dealt with a bizarre case of sibling rivalry Monday night when they had to break up two brothers who were fighting over who got the bigger piece of steak. At around 11 p.m., the 17-year-old brother went berserk and began smashing things in their Craig Flower Road apartment with a hockey stick. Because despite his doing the cooking, his 22-year-old brother got the larger piece of steak for dinner. According to John Ducker, the deputy police chief, who was writing about this on their operations blog, the call came in as a youth going crazy from the building manager who heard the loud banging on the apartment walls.
Is there a police code for that, a youth going crazy?
In Canada, there probably is.
All right.
When police arrived, they saw the younger brother had punched out some of the drywall as well as a computer monitor. The brother had also taken a toaster into the bathroom and threatened to kill himself by throwing it into a bathtub full of water. Police finally found the younger brother outside the apartment and managed to calm him down. He was taken to a hospital for an assessment, and officers brought the young man home once he had regained his composure.
God damn, people are weird, you know? They're just weird, like nobody's business. I mean, I guess we should be glad for this because they are part of the colorful thread that is woven through the human tapestry. It's just strange.
It is. It is indeed. We have a snuff watch.
Here is your... really? I'm not even sure that I know who this is. Hold on. Let me think. Actor?
Yes.
It's not Abe Vigoda. It's never Abe Vigoda.
No, it's...
Do you get the feeling that if Abe Vigoda actually dies, then the entire universe is going to unravel and go down like some sort of a drain? Like a cosmic sort of a wormhole?
No one will believe you.
Yeah.
It's Abe Vigoda. No!
There ought to be... Okay, seriously? You guys, somebody ought to make a like a little quirky sci-fi film where it turns out that Abe Vigoda really is sort of the cosmic glue holding everything together, and that if Abe Vigoda ever is killed, that life as we know it will reduce instantly to a singularity, ending all existence on Earth. And so, but then there's some like Illuminati type group that wants this to happen, and then there's like a ragtag band of misfits that has to, and it's called Saving Abe Vigoda. And then you got to stop, they got to protect Abe Vigoda because he's some sort of a keymaster portal guard that keeps the universe from ending. See, you're just looking at me like it's not the best idea you ever heard.
No,
and it is. It is.
My stepbrother once wrote to Jim Backus to ask him if he was still alive.
Really?
Mm-hmm. He didn't hear back.
But well, that's just out, sad. That it, just ended, that ended it, creepily.
It turned out he actually was still alive because about a year later he died, and then we kind of felt bad.
Oh, so he was alive. He was just a dick.
Yeah.
All right. Well, fair enough. I mean, look, any port in a storm, I guess. Here's your snuff watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here is Don Taylor with your snuff watch.
Stage and screen actor James MacArthur, who played Dano in the original version of television's Hawaii Five-0, died yesterday at age 72. MacArthur's agent said the actor died in Florida of natural causes, but no direct cause was specified. In a career that spanned more than four decades, MacArthur was most recognized for his role as Detective Danny Dano Williams on Hawaii Five-0, which aired from 1968 to 1980. Episodes often ended with Detective Steve McGarrett, the lead character, uttering what became the pop culture catchphrase, Book'em Dano. Jack Lord, who starred as McGarrett, died in 1998. MacArthur quit the role of McGarrett's sidekick a year before the program's final season. He explained on his website, quite frankly, I grew bored. The stories became more bland and predictable and presented less and less challenge to me as an actor.
You know who could not possibly be more happy about this is those folks at the new Hawaii Five-0 show, because now they can do a whole like, you know, what's his first name?
James MacArthur.
So they can do a whole like, for James at the end. You know what I mean?
My first thought, honestly, and it's kind of terrible when I heard the story, I think it was last night, I saw this on the news, my thought was he had to die now because otherwise how could he roll over in his grave as to what they're doing with his show?
One sort of requires the other, I guess. Also, the guy from from Captain Kangaroo died.
Yes,
He played. And see, I'm not the hugest Captain Kangaroo fan.
He was like one of the neighbors, or he was a what was he?
I don't know, Mr. Punksy Walkett or something.
I doubt that was it at all.
You don't know though.
I
you can't say with absolute clarity and certainty that it wasn't Mr. Punksy Walkett.
Yes, I can, because I saw this on the news earlier today, and I can say for that I may not remember what the name was, but I know for a fact it was not Mr. Punksy Walkett.
It's demonstrably not that.
No.
But admit that that's a pretty great name for anybody.
That is a good name.
Like if I had a ferret, I would totally name him Mr. Punksy Walkett. just so you know. I mean, just because that's
a... That would be a good hedgehog name.
That's how I roll. You know what I almost... Here's the... We had that cat the other day. Was like... Was it Roy Munson?
Yeah.
Which is like... What I didn't even realize, that's the Kingpin reference.
Right.
I totally didn't even spot that. I very nearly, when we got Philo, I very nearly named him Ned Ryerson, just because I thought, you know, because that's just sort of a great name. And plus, yeah. I love the whole thing of giving an animal a first and last name, you know, like a surname and a Christian name. There's something really amusing about that. So Mr. Punksy Walkett, though, that's, you know, if I ever get a little, if I ever get another spiny friend, that might be what I christen him that. All right. Did we close the snuff watch?
No, we did not.
All right. So that guy's dead as well. The not Mr. Punksy Walkett guy. Also not alive. There's
right.
Your snuff watch. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A family in Albuquerque is fighting to get their dog back from a shelter, but the city won't give up the pet before neutering him. The dog's owners are doing what they need to do to take him back before the shelter fixes him. They're attempting to get a court order to prove that the dog needs to stay intact because he's a pedigreed dog and is used for breeding. Prince has been at the East Side Shelter in Albuquerque since Tuesday morning. Someone brought the dog, a Pomeranian, in after he allegedly wandered off his property almost 15 miles away from where he ended up. It was a fantastic relief to know our dog is safe, said the dog's owner, who went to pick up the Pomeranian. His name is Paul Sugar, by the way, the owner. The shelter refused to give him up because he isn't fixed. That's a violation of the city's heart ordinance. The dog, however, resides around 15 miles outside of the city limits, and Sugar said, I told them, you've got to be mistaken. This is a county animal, not a city animal. By law, animals must be neutered before they are adopted or given back to their owners if they end up in an Albuquerque shelter and are from one of the five surrounding counties. Shelter officials said they can't make an exception for Prince, even though he's used to breed. Prince's owner said the situation isn't fair and he's determined to keep his dog. So they're going to court.
I instinctively dislike people who are who care about their dog's lineage or have like a piece of paper somewhere, like in a drawer, telling you like what he is. I just, there's something about me that just wants to stab those people in the eyes with a fireplace poker.
Yeah, I have. This is one of the stories that I was reading. I had no idea how I felt about it at all, because on the one hand, it's like the whole rule that I understand why they spay and neuter dogs in the shelter,
right,
and it makes sense. But if somebody comes to you and says, you know, look, we use our dog. Our dog is a breeding,
right,
dog, you know, and he was just lost and we're his owners. Can we have him back
did
now?
You say how he got lost? Like, did they leave him?
He just got out of his yard.
He just got out somewhere. Because
yeah,
that's their whole thing, right? Just like, well, he's out. He could have impregnated 17 other dogs by now. And then we got, you know, crap to deal with.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Because the thing is, it's not like, you know, because the deal with how many dogs are in an average litter? I have no idea what the answer to that
I
is.
I don't know.
You gotta, it's like, you know, it's like,
yeah,
6, 7, 8, something like that. So it's not like, look, I mean, if your teenage kid gets out for the night, I mean, how many women could he possibly impregnate? 5, 6 the most. And it's like they're probably only going to have, you know, like a kid each, probably.
And this is a Pomeranian, so, you know, his.
And you know how they are.
Well, and also.
Can't keep it in their pants, Don.
But they're small little dogs, though. So the number of dogs that he can successfully breed with, I think, are less than if, say, he was a Labrador Retriever.
That's true. No, it doesn't. That's sort of a. That's an equation that only works one way, I guess, too.
Yeah.
The small dog, the big dog thing. But I guess from their point of view, it's like if he gets 5 other dogs pregnant, they each have 6 puppies or whatever. And, you know, that's like 25, 30 dogs they got to deal with. Plus, you can't make an
right
exception for some jackass just because he wants to be on TV running around like an idiot with his dog someday.
Yeah, so. And there is a point where it's kind of like, you know, you let your dog accidentally got out. It got in the shelter. That's the rule. That's
yeah
the rule.
Well, that's,
suck it up.
That's the thing. Like, you just, you know, those are the breaks. Can I tell you, so I got to, I won't do a whole dog thing because I don't have pictures, so there's no point. But I, you know, I took Max and Philo to get groomed yesterday and to get the haircut
that's
and everything.
Right.
And I picked them up and Max looks, of course, like he always does, like a like an entitled little prince, and just sort of prancing around the house going, it all belongs to me. But it's like I picked up Philo, who just looks so scraggly and weird under the best of circumstances. And I was thinking to myself last night, there is no circumstance or manner of presentation in which he does not look like a freak. That's the thing. I'll have to get a photograph and post it like this weekend just for comparison.
He's a goofy, goofy-looking little dog.
Yeah, because – and he gets like – he gets the thing about like the tear stains, you know, by his eyes. And plus he's all scraggly and it's like he's got a tiny head and these huge legs.
And he's a walleye.
Yeah, and it's like – and his fur is all weird and it looks matted even when it's not. And it's like – and, you know, and they're calling me from the grooming place. They're like, all right, your dog – well, first of all, they actually said this. They call me and they go, okay, now your dog, Philo? And I said, Philo. And they go, Philo? Okay, first of all, what is he exactly? And I said, what do you mean? They go, we can't, where did you get him? And it was like they're trying to find a really polite way to say, like, your dog is made of spare parts from other dogs that didn't quite make it. And I said, yeah, and I actually just said, he's a dachshund. Well, because that's what his papers say. And you know what? And plus, I just like to screw with people. And they went, and there was like a pause, and they went, okay, so how do you want his hair cut? And I just said, you know, just, I said, do whatever's going to make him look the best. And I sort of laughed to myself and hung up. But it's like, I picked him up, and it's like, he looks like he weighs about 4 pounds. He's just made of pipe cleaners. But in a way, and this is the last thing I'll say about it, but I think I speak for a lot of us, because Bella is. I don't know if she's like a purebred pit bull or
no,
whatever.
No, she's pit bull mixed with something. We don't know
see,
what she's.
But don't you feel like that's sort of like the more American dog to have, you know, the mutt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like that's the whole. It's like, you know, there's Obama got a little bit of a flack when he referred to himself as being a mutt in the news a couple months ago. He just said, he goes, well, like many of you, I have a background, comes from many different countries. I'm a mutt. And everybody, you know, and Matt Drudge was like, oh, president refers to himself as, but what if a white man had said that? But it's like, you know, as Bill Murray said, there is, you know, nothing is more beloved and more American than the mutt. I think that there ought to be, if this does not exist already, and if it doesn't exist already, that's Rick Emerson right now laying claim to this as a sort of a poor man's verbal copyright here. There ought to be just some coffee table book that is just called, like, American Mutts. That's just pictures of, like, scraggly-ass, like, kind of but cool-looking American dogs.
Yeah.
Because they're way better than, you know, like, you get some, like, and here's the other thing. It's like those dogs that are purebred where it's like the guy's like, and I can trace his lineage back to you know, John's Chance from five generations ago. Those dogs have always got, like, weird where it's like they can't breathe.
Yeah, there's,
or it's like their heart falls out at some point.
Yeah, there's this point with the overbreeding where you've got the dogs that have the hip dysplasia, the dogs that have the breathing problems. That So it strengthens dogs to be interbred with other.
And they all end up just looking like they all end up looking just like what's her name, Duchess Fergie or something. Where they're just sort of blankly like looking around and then occasionally just going, you know, and just twitching a lot, and then you know. So anyway, she doesn't really sound like that. That's just an artist. That's an aural rendition in my head of what she might sound like. Let's do one more. We'll take a break here, Dawn Taylor.
Okay. The details of a Pentagon survey on Don't Ask, Don't Tell aren't out in the open yet, but sources who have seen the report say that the results are clear. Most troops don't mind serving with gay soldiers. The findings are that for most soldiers, and this wasn't the sum total of all soldiers, it wasn't that big of a deal. The majority, the number one answer, first answer was, I don't care. That's significant, said NBC News' Richard Engel. He continued, he was talking to Rachel Maddow last night. He continued, number two was, I would deal directly with the person involved. So when you put those two together, it is the majority. So, you know, if they did have a problem with someone being gay, they wouldn't take it to their commanding officers or anything. They'd just talk to the guy.
Well, and also, look, I hate to be Johnny Logic over here, but also you're in the military, which means the last time I checked, you do what you're told. And so if the guy above you says, hey, you're going to have some gay folk in your unit and you're going to be okay with it and there's not going to be any ruckus about it. Do you understand? And you go, okay. And then like that's how the joint works, right? You sign in the military, like they get to shave your head and tell you what to do. And that's just the way it is.
He added, being gay is not a deal breaker, that they're not going to be running from the army in droves. The study matters because a number of Republicans and Democrats have promised to vote in accordance with what the troops have to say. A Think Progress roundup named Senators Olympia Snowe, Lindsey Graham, George Voinovich, Scott Brown, and Mark Pryor is among them. And the Don't Ask, Don't Tell report is seen as a centerpiece of the Pentagon review. The report will be officially released in the first week of December, and a vote to repeal the ban on gays in the military is expected to come soon after.
Well, I mean, again, and I understand political ass covering. I know how that works. And it seems to me, and it sort of seems to bear out what you and I probably, what most people would have thought, which is that, like, most people don't really care one way or the other.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that whole Kinsey scale thing where there's, like, you know, there's the tiny fraction of people at either end, you know, but everybody else is sort of in a gray area in the middle. Most people are probably going, well, I don't know, six of one, half a dozen of the other. But again, since when is the military like a democracy where they're having a show of hands about who wants to go to war in Afghanistan? No one. All right. Well, okay. I guess we stay home. I mean, it's strange that for this, suddenly, they get to do like a, you know, they get to do like a rock, paper, scissors thing with everybody where they, you know, to figure it out. A couple of messages. This one just says, does your junk have a first and last name? And then he refers to me as G. All right. Thank you. This message says, I just made a purchase using the Emerson discount code on ThinkGeek. Happy Friday. No. Happy Friday to you, sir. How about this? Dawn has it backward, I believe. Isn't it that little dogs can breed with larger dogs, whereas big dogs can only breed with large dogs?
I was thinking more just from a height standpoint.
I don't even know what we're talking about, because maybe there's like some nomenclature here that I'm not quite grasping.
I think he might be thinking of bigger in a different way than I'm thinking.
Well,
I was thinking of physically the actual physical size of the dog, not like the size of, say, the dog's member.
Is that what's being referred to here?
I think maybe that's what he's saying.
Well, let me ask you this. Maybe like linguistically there's something I'm not quite grokking. When it says, leaving aside the truth or not of this statement, when it says little dogs can breed with larger dogs, big dogs can breed with... What does that mean, breed? In other words, that's implying one side of the equation or the other. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you're saying little dogs can breed with larger dogs. Well, that doesn't mean anything unless breed means either the woman or the man, either the male or the female.
Yeah. What he's saying, actually, when you actually look at it as a sentence, it makes no sense.
All right. Let's see. Okay, here, this is funny, actually. Somebody just typed the phrase, show of penises. Now, I don't know whether that's a sort of like a weird pun on the military doing the show of hands about gays in the military.
There we go.
Or if they are, in fact, just describing this program as being, quote, a show of penises. Which
I
isn't
think
maybe.
Either one is appropriate, really, and true.
I think, figuratively speaking, that is true. All right. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. Coming up a little bit later on, we got the Taser Watch on the way, Religious Nutcase on the way, Stupid Criminal of the Week. Mr. Aaron Duran will be joining us here in just a skosh. We'll be counting on the top five scariest video games of all time. The top five scariest video games of all time. Speaking of nomenclature, linguistics, language, and communication, whether it's the international language or something else, maybe just a language that like... No, I went down a blind alley there. Wait. No, I have nothing. Nothing. My language skills failed me. Don't let your language skills fail you, specifically your Spanish language skills. You can hone those or perhaps shape them from scratch if you have never had any Spanish education in your life by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is the website for Castalia Language Center. They are based in downtown Portland. A couple things to note about Castalia Language Center, because you talk about people learning... Talking to people about learning language is sort of like when you talk to people about learning math or science or something, where they just get flashbacks to high school where there was just some guy who was really, like, was probably just, like, the gym coach who'd been in charge of the class for somebody because, like, they fired the last guy for making acid in the school science lab or something. And so they said, hey, Ted, I hate to take you away from your dodgeball game, but you gotta go teach quantum physics. And he just kind of, you know, schleps over there and just points at things on that little overhead projector with the little knobs and the little, you know, the saran wrap thing. Anyway... but if you've taken Spanish language in high school, you probably even now are sort of backing away and just saying, no, I don't want to hear anything about prepositions or dangling participles. It's all very confusing. The thing about language, you've got to learn it conversationally. You've got to learn it colloquially. And that's a lot easier to do with Spanish than it is with English. It's a lot easier to do with most languages than English. But Spanish stands apart in many ways in that Spanish is an internally consistent language. You learn how to, you know, to pronounce it. You learn how to say the words out loud. I mean, you can do that in just a few minutes, 10 minutes probably. The rules of grammar, the words interacting with each other, in what order they go, it's way easier than English. So if you got maybe scared off from learning Spanish when you were in high school or something, you felt like it just wasn't taught to you correctly, you were just having to memorize it, but you didn't really get it. Now is the time to approach it anew, and there's no better place to do it than at Castalia Language Center. You contact them at PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com, and they will find something that works with your schedule, the day of the week, the time of day that works best for you, and they'll find a language level that interacts with what you already know. So if you already know a little bit of Spanish, they've got a class for you. If you're starting from scratch, or maybe you're just trying to polish it because you've spoken it for a long time, but you want to hone it, I can cover you there as well. Please tell me you heard it right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. That is Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. Yes, Don Taylor?
Nothing. I get nothing.
I can't tell when you're typing something into Babel and you're getting ready to give me a Spanish phrase and when you're not.
No, this was not. No, this had nothing. No.
I got nothing. So you weren't preparing like an ocho or something from the...
No.
How do you say...
Nada.
How do you say, where can I get some Vicodin in... oh, my God. We should totally do a phrase of the day that Don Taylor actually needs. Like a thing you might actually need in conversation. And then Clara Grebel or somebody else from Castalia, they can just come and they can actually teach it to you.
Yeah, that would be good. This is it. This is the song.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That I wanted to know what song it was, and this is the song. Now, we were doing this yesterday.
The Lenny D song.
Da 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 da. Now, yes.
Hold on a second. Now, see if I can. Now, I may have screwed myself, actually. I may have to go back, dig back through, because it just came up randomly. All right. We spent, by the way, if you didn't hear this, we spent an inordinate amount of time yesterday going through all of the Lenny D beds, or 17 of them, I think.
That was looking, it.
All right. Well, we'll address it on the other side. We come back. You see, you can't do that because it doesn't. See, but now you're back to me not knowing what it was again. I had it for a second, and now you're doing the that. I'm not Shazam. I don't. All right. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Aaron Duran on the way, as well as Taser Watch, Religious Nutcase Watch, and more of these merry japes. When we return, you're listening to the Emerson News Network.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
this town. Don't we love it now? Everybody's waiting for the next surprise. Skeleton can't break, get you in a bed and scream like a banshee. Make you jump out of your skin. This is Halloween, everybody scream. Won't you please make me for a very special guy? Hoffman Jack is king of the funky patch. Everyone hail to the funky king now.
All right, everybody sit down, quiet down, listen up. I brought you all here to recite the annual obituaries. Like every year, we'll start with A and we'll end with Z. All right, is the band ready?
Ready.
All right, hit it, Boyles.
A one and a two.
Drown in a pool. B is for Billy who was eaten by ghoul. C is for Kurt with disease of the brain. D is for Daniel derailed on a train. E is for Eric who's buried alive. F is for Frank who was stabbed through the eye. G is for Craig who died in the womb. H is for Heather who was sealed in a tomb.
One by one we fight the dust. Kick the bucket and begin to rust. Give up the ghost when your number's up. We all fall down. Ashes to ashes, bones to paste. You'll wither away in your resting place. Eternity in a wooden case. We all fall down.
I is for Isaac who lost his front brakes. J is for Johnny who was bitten by snakes. K is for Kimmy who was shot in the head. L is for Larry who bled and bled. N is for Marie who was burnt to a crisp. N is for Nick who was pummeled by fist. O is for Olive who lived like too. B is for Pat, who swallowed some glass.
To the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. And because now I'm already getting emails about it, that is Creature Feature, which is the name of that band, Creature Feature. And that song is called A Gory Demise. I do believe, although I cannot swear to this, I think the Creature Feature is on tour right now. They may be coming to our fair city here in Portland. Although, they were actually, you know, now that I say that, I think they were actually coming to Satyricon. I think it was part of the, I think it's part of that thing I had tickets for that I now will not be able to attend ever. So, in any event. It is Friday, October 29th, 2010. Still to come, Mr. Aaron Duran with the week from geekinthecity.com. Rather, he'll be doing the top five. The top five scariest video games. We'll also talk about the Geek-O-Lantern contest. You can see all the entries at geekolantern.com. That is geekolantern.com. And we'll announce the winners of the Think Geek $100 gift certificate and all of the assembled swag. Let me ask you this about your Vicodin.
Okay.
So when you take, was it just one entire Vicodin that you smashed up and power loaded this morning?
Yes.
Theoretically speaking, like if you were taking that like a normal human, how long would that last you? In other words, they would say, this Vicodin will hold you for however many hours.
Normally, it would last me probably 4 or 5 hours at least.
How long would it take it to kick in?
I'd probably would start like doing its pain relief thing in about 15, 20 minutes.
So normally it kicks in 15 minutes or so, lasts for like maybe 4 or 5 hours. When you're obliterating it in a powder and then putting it, by the way, and just the fact that you're putting it in like a bottle cap, it just sounds like something that you learned in the prison yard. You know what I mean? Is the next thing that you just, like, is that right? Is that before or after, like, you boil it and, like, strain it through cotton?
Well, if I had scraped it off the table into, like, the palm of my hand, a lot of it would have stuck to my hand, and then I would have to lick it off my hand or something.
And that would just be pathetic. That would indicate you had a problem.
Right. That would be, yeah, that would be sad.
Let me ask you this, and I just want you to be honest here.
Okay.
If you had in your possession a pocket mirror, would you have used the mirror?
For
the chopping and...
No.
Chopping. Just, you know, terms of the right tool for the job.
No, the Formica tabletop is hard and smooth enough for that.
And also covered in a fair amount of DNA, I would guess, but that's just me. All right, so having pounded it into dust and then down the hatch,
yes.
How long did it take to kick in, and how long will it last?
It still took about 10 to 15 minutes. I think it will probably... It'll last me considerably less time, because it's not time-release. So I'm probably... I don't know, 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours, maybe.
Okay.
Long enough to get through the show before I, you know, my headache comes back and I suddenly go, eh.
Long enough to make it through the unholy hell of this program before you once again turn into a pumpkin.
Well, actually, enough to not have a headache and not destroy my enjoyment of this program, which is the highlight of my day. Because if I have a headache and I don't feel good, like, you know, in the rest of my crappy, stinking life, who cares? I want to feel good when I'm here, because this is the good part of my life.
I see it hasn't destroyed your razor-sharp sense of sarcasm and humor. Excellent. Your Noel Coward-esque wit is intact, and that's what matters. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program at the news desk. It's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, it's Friday, so it's time for us to do our Stupid Criminal of the Week.
Awesome. Here is your Stupid Criminal of the Week, brought to you by mugshotlist.com. That is mugshotlist.com. That is sponsored by our good friend Andy, who operates that fine website. It's mugshotlist.com. They cover a whole huge swath, a massive section of these United States, and they are adding more mugshots all the time. There is an army of... I thought he was just sort of like goofing when he just said, you know, that it was updated around the clock by robots. I don't know that they're actual robots in, like, of the kind. I think they're regular sort of articulated mechanical robots. Those are all busy punching people in Sweden, apparently, and trying to discern exactly where the human threshold for pain lies.
Yeah.
But apparently it is a sort of an automaton kind of a thing, where it just sort of updates itself. These sort of little spiders, like in the movie Runaway with Gene Simmons, that updates this around the clock, covering 19 counties in Oregon and 13 states, including Florida, Georgia, Texas, and Ohio. And full membership gets you full searching ability. You can browse mugshots by categories like county and gender and view unlimited pages. And it's mugshotlist.com, providing this, the Stupid Criminal of the Week.
Police in California arrested two burglary suspects and recovered stolen property after following a candy trail that led them to the crooks. On Tuesday, around 8 p.m., Modesto police officers were called to the Best Electric business after an alarm went off. When they got there, they found the window smashed and saw that a candy dispenser machine had been stolen. Officers reviewed surveillance cameras and were able to see a pickup truck used by the robbery suspects to flee the location.
Sounds like they were trying to get quite a payday.
But they screwed up because they had butterfingers.
Were they hoping to get 100,000, was it 100 grand? Were they hoping to get 100 grand, Don?
There are only two of them, though. They weren't Three Musketeers.
I think I failed. If they'd done it, it would have been quite a score.
When they talked about it at the police station, there were lots of snickers.
I feel like I have a Milky Way one, but it's just cheating. Oh, damn you, I've lost. No, I got nothing. I have nothing.
So anyway, they saw this, the pickup truck that they used on the surveillance. Later that night, an officer spotted the pickup truck near 2nd Street and 8th Street. When they pulled the truck over, they noticed there was candy spilled all over the bed of the truck. The two suspects inside the truck were detained and questioned about the burglary. Later, when the officers searched the home of one of the suspects, they found a candy trail leading them from the door of the house to the candy machine.
Wow.
The suspects, 29-year-old John Say and 28-year-old Dushan Aranda, were booked into the Stanislaus County Jail for commercial burglary and probation violation, making them our stupid criminals of the week.
I was trying to do like a whole, you know, in the interrogation, do you suppose they were trying to get one to roll over on the next? See, I didn't.
They were hoping the candy machine would be filled with mounds and mounds of cash.
Why do you got to do that? Why do you got to spike the ball like that? Don't be a poor winner, Don. You're running up the score on me. That's showboating.
And I'm on drugs.
Well, you act like that's not an advantage. Sorry. I guess only one of us is having their synapses fire like Jiffy Pop from a big mound of chemical genius that was ingested earlier this morning. Fine. Sue me. There's your stupid criminal of the week brought to you by mugshotlist.com. I hope you die. Mugshotlist.com, a proud business partner here at the Emerson News Network.
One of the criminals was on the thin side.
Stop.
The other one was kind of chunky.
Stop. Damn you. I was hoping this music would reset things enough that I wouldn't be plagued by your continued reminders about you're smarter and funnier than I am when it comes to candy-based humor. Hey, have you read the book Candy and Me, A Love Story?
No, that's not the one by Steve Almond, is it?
No, it's a woman. I forget her name, but it's called Candy and Me, A Love Story, and it's just it's great, really. It's the this is a weird thing to say. It's like the Fargo Rock City of the candy world, but it's just a girl talking about she's just a big sort of candy enthusiast. But it avoids the whole reflexive. Like, it's not just some book that you're going to see some chick wringing her hands about an Oprah, you know, about it. And then I just realized that I was full of self-loathing and candy was my enemy. It's not that. It's like a big, like, just celebration of all that is righteous in the world of candy and how just as a kid she didn't, you know, it wasn't that she just loved sweet things. She liked candy because it was just because it was fun and how it came packaged in infinite varieties and how she became fascinated by the different variations on sort of candy themes and novelty candy like bottle caps and how there were things that seemed the same, like Score and Heath bars, yet are not the same because a Heath bar has a slightly different taste than a Score. And it's really a great book. I strongly recommend it. It's called Candy and Me, A Love Story. And it's a really great, like, completely, like, at no point does she just break down and start just blubbering about how she can't quit eating it or something. I mean, she really just revels in the fact that she loves it. It's really quite something. It's a great book.
Also the book Candy Freak by Steve Almond, who wrote Rock and Roll Will Save Your Life. And it's kind of like this almost like David Sedaris style kind of a book with just all of these essays musing on candy.
Really?
And it's really good. It's really, really, really good.
Let me ask you this. When you go trick-or-treating as a young person, as a child, what was the candy bar or the candy item, the mainstream candy item which you most hoped to receive?
I think the most treasured candy item in the bag was probably the fun-size Snickers. Although I have to admit that I ended up really treasuring the little things of Smarties because they're something that you just never really bought for yourself over the course of the year. You only ever got them when you were trick-or-treating, it seemed like.
But that's because they taste like chalk, I think. They have no actual – there's really no flavor. It's like eating a Flintstones vitamin, basically.
I liked Smarties.
Really?
Yeah. They had kind of a – I like things that have a lot of citric acid in it, you know, that give you that really tangy,
like a sweet tart kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a fan of the sweet tart. And I was born too early in this regard. I was born before the salad days of the sour candy. And before there was like Warheads and Tear Jerkers and, you know, all of that stuff where it's like the whole point is just to cause you pain. When I was a kid, it was all about the hot candy. We didn't have they had moved on to the sour candy.
Liked the hot candy.
All about like Fireballs and so forth. And like Red Hots, which that's where you start. That was your entry level heat creating candy.
I had a friend, though, who about 10 years ago, he was a big sour candy freak, and he introduced me to the sour candy thing. And we would go to whatever that overpriced candy store is at the mall that has just the big bins of candy that you just...
What are you talking about, like the caramel corn shop?
It's kind of like the caramel... I think it's just called the Candy Factory or something, and there's just bins and bins and bins of candy that you buy by the pound. And he introduced me to these things, and they have, like, the one in particular, there was a... they had a lot of sour, like, gummy candies. And there's one that's watermelon flavored.
Right.
And it's like... they're like the orange slices, so they're kind of gummy and kind of jelly-like. But and then they're wrapped in, they're rolled in sugar. But they were like, it was like watermelon flavored, but it was sour, and it was, they're so delicious,
like a Sour Patch Kid kind of.
Yeah,
yeah.
Now the I love that stuff.
That was see, just as I was leaving, high school, that's when the Sour Patch Kids were ascendant. And the Sour Patch Kids, that was an offshoot of the gummy candy craze, mm-hmm. which really that reached its apotheosis. It's sort of the apogee for that was like 89, 90, 91. And I know this because in my hometown there was, and I don't know if this, have we ever talked about this before, but figuring out if there's a chain or whatever of like caramel corn stores that are all basically, they're all like the one in Lloyd Center. And I don't know if there's if those are franchises or if it's just like there's some common like cultural blueprint for how a candy corn store is supposed to look or a caramel corn, I keep saying candy corn, but caramel corn store is supposed to look. But a friend of mine worked at the caramel corn store at the Kennewick Mall when I was growing up. And it was one of those jobs that like when you were graduating from high school, like it would be passed down either to like a younger brother if he was of working age or to like an underclassman. It was like some weird like British boarding school kind of a thing. So my friend Brian had that job for like 3 years. And so we would always, it sounds like we were hoods or something. We would always meet up at the candy shop before we went to whack a guy for Murder Incorporated. I believe this is Aaron Duran actually calling on the phone right here. But so we will have speaks with Aaron in just one moment. But that was my point. But anyway, so we would go there and I got to see the sort of evolution of what was popular with kids in terms of candy from month to month, year to year over the few years that he worked there. And first it was just gummy worms or like gummy bears maybe. So that company, they're like the Sanrio of gummy food. It's the Haribo company. And they make all the top shelf gummy foods apparently. Mm-hmm. And then it became like gummy frogs. And then it was from gummy frogs. Then they just started to go crazy because then there were like gummy snakes. And the gummy snakes were like gummy worms, but they were huge. And then I swear to God, at one point they made, I mean, it was life size and it was detailed to an almost unnerving degree. It was a gummy rat that was about 9 inches long. And then there was a gummy tarantula, which I just found terrifying, and I couldn't even get anywhere near it. I think then they realized that they had reached the end of the road there, gummy style. They'd taken that particular swing of the candy pendulum as far as they possibly could, and they needed to have something, some gimmick, that they could add to it to then take them to the next level. And then it became the Sour Patch Kids, which were gummy candies that were just rolled in this sort of weird, sugary yet unbelievably tart. And is it just like you? I mean, you cook stuff. Is it just like citric acid? Is that what you use?
It's just powdered citric acid.
So that's just a basic ingredient you could get anywhere.
Yeah, you can buy it at any store that sells like candy baking supplies.
Let me just ask.
I have some at home, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you thought about making your own? Let me ask you this. Have you thought about making your own proprietary line of candy? Creating your own candy from scratch. Not like replicating an existing candy.
Rick, you mean like inventing a new kind of
yes,
candy?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I understand that you have a chocolate company. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying like the first, like one day there was no candy corn. The next day, candy corn.
I don't know. I never really thought about that because I don't know. My problem with food and inventing new kinds of food is that I honestly am of the impression, and I could probably be wrong, but I firmly believe that everything has already been invented, which is why they keep like now just coming up with weird flavors and combinations of things, because there is no food that can be invented at this point, other than the things that they, you know, are just making completely in a lab out of chemicals.
Okay. All right. So you feel like maybe it's the all of the various combinations.
Yeah.
It's like,
but on the other hand, though, there are all kinds of variations within those things. Like with the candy company that I had for a while, I was making my own marshmallows, and I was making I tried making lemon marshmallows and orange marshmallows. And one thing I found was they were too sweet for my taste and too sort of bland and almost sherbet-y tasting. And that's why I went out and I purchased the citric acid. And I started actually adding citric acid to the marshmallows when I would make the citrus flavors because I wanted there to be that tart bite to it. And to me, they were much, much better at that point because then it was like that punch of orange rather than chasing like, you know, orange sherbet or something.
Here's the thing. I swear to God, it's my final thought. And we'll welcome Aaron to the show. And I'm instructing the candy corn guy how to arrive here, the guy with the jelly belly candy corn. Here's the thing. You know, food that I don't get? I don't understand this at all. I've talked about the circus peanuts thing in the past, and that's
oh, they're vile.
See, but that's like, to me, it's like that the jersey for the circus peanuts is almost hanging in the rafters. Like, it's like, I think we've figured out that no one really wants those. I mean, that's a thing that people, have you ever known anybody in your life who like went to the store because I got to get me some circus peanuts? No.
My father ate circus peanuts.
Really?
My father liked circus peanuts. My father also liked herring in sour cream and pickled pig's feet. And he had some weird Midwestern palate from growing up in Nebraska, where he just really liked horrible food.
So was his headstone stolen just recently? One of those guys? Did his name have like a zero with an X through it or something? Let's welcome out of the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Is this Mr. Aaron Duran? Hello.
Hello.
Hey. Forgive my whatever. Now I was. Are you joining us in studio today?
Yeah. I'm outside the studio.
When you say you're outside the studio, are you in the hallway?
No, I'm downstairs. It's the one time they're not letting in just some random person on the street.
Oh, okay. I wonder, because I'd sent Aaron a text. I'm like, you know, in doing show, just walk in when arrive. So you're actually downstairs on the street level.
Yeah, sorry.
All right. We'll come conjure you here in just one moment. Just hang loose, blood.
Okay.
All right, there you go. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Don, if you would be good enough to go let Mr. Duran in. While you were doing that, I will talk about the fine folks that helped to keep this program here on the air, amusing people by the score, by the metric ton, by the hectare, from sea to shining sea, around the globe, as it were. Because really, let's be honest, it's not like you'd be able to tune into Glenn Beck and hear him talking about circus peanuts. It's weird. I'm just sitting in a room. There's nobody here. I could do something horrible to one of Don's possessions right now. I don't think I will. I mean, but if I wanted to, I'm just saying, like, I could lick the inside of her headphones. Which, having said it out loud, I think that'd be way worse for me, actually. I think the ick factor would... Then I'll be on this side of the table. All right. I gotta quit talking out loud like this right now, because it's weirding me out. Okay. Squires Electric helps to make this program, up to and including my creepy, out loud, first-person perspective ruminations possible. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com, or you call them at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. If you've got a house, and this is the case for, you know, the whole sections of Portland, like John's Landing, which is where I lived when I first moved here, and all of those houses are great, but they're great because they've got that classic design that's from like 85, 90, 100 years ago, which also means it's not going to be wired like all that well, which is the thing. You know, I'm not saying they're, you know, it's not like they're wired wrong or incorrectly. It's not even a thing you're really going to find out until you try to plug in like one computer too many, and then if you're lucky, there's just sort of a pop, and then everything goes out. If you're not lucky, you know, then it's a flambe time. So I'm just saying, you don't want to run that risk. It's 503-252-1609. That's 503-252-1609. Or contact them at squireselectric.com. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, and whether you just want to have them check and make sure that everything is working properly. If you're heading into winter, you're heading to summer, maybe you're doing a home business, or you're just adding a lot more electronic devices to your house, maybe way more than the last guy had. You're building a structure from scratch. Or maybe the office building where you are, they didn't have that kind of business before, and you find that everything's getting squeezed down through a tiny little Ethernet connection. You got to have it expanded. They can do all that for you. SquiresElectric.com is the name of the company. SquiresElectric.com. That's where you find them. SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, that can make your life easier. Squires Electric. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. It is Friday, October 29th, 2010. Don't forget, the Blood and Guts Bash happens tonight at the Baghdad Theater, brought to you by Things from Another World, Dark Horse Comics, by me, Rick Emerson. Not really by me. That's a thing I'm just going to say until somebody pulls me aside and tells me not to say it anymore. It's brought to you as well by Northwest 32 TV, that is cable channel 3, the home of Gossip Girl, Vampire Diaries, and...
Hellcats!
And also me, Rick Emerson.
Oh,
Dawn.
Yeah.
I think that's the answer you were looking for there. So if,
I watched Hellcats.
Here's the thing about Hellcats is that that's a program that people come out of the gate thinking they're not going to like. And then it's like you get about, it's like a food where you go, I just don't know about this. And you get two bites in, you go, well, maybe. And then by the third bite, you're totally sold on it. That's the thing with Hellcats. So happening the Baghdad tonight, we'll be doing a whole fistful of programming. It's all going to start with a special screening of a Halloween episode of Vampire Diaries, followed by Helsing and Gantz, which are two unbelievably fast-paced, unbelievably violent, unbelievably fantabulous offerings of Japanese animation based on the manga titles of the same name. Don Taylor and myself will be there. That is 9 to midnight at the Baghdad. No cover, but you got to be 21 and over to attend. You can find out more at rickemerson.com or just by going to the Baghdad Theater's website. That is tonight. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program. From geekinthecity.com, Mr. Aaron Duran. Hello, sir.
Hello, how's it going?
It's going...
Can this go higher?
Yes.
Like up?
You mean physically?
Yeah. I mean, I can slouch, I guess.
You got... Yeah, just you got hands.
Well... I never know if, like, don't mess with my stuff.
You gotta loosen that.
No, you
that.
Gotta,
there you go.
Yeah, there just, you go. Just, there you go. Fantastic. Awesome.
Well, I wasn't sure if you had it, like, I don't know, locked in or something.
No, it's, okay. It's all good. Are you wearing, just to
yeah.
sidetrack myself for one moment, you're wearing a shirt that says Bull Shifters.
Bull Shifters.
Is that the shirt that What's His Guts wears in Left 4 Dead 2?
Yeah, it's the one,
What is his name, the redneck?
Oh,
I can't remember his name now.
I wish we had his name, because he was talking about me and my buddy Keith this one time.
Yeah.
Got ourselves locked in the trailer, and we thought it'd be fun to eat nothing but popcorn for 3 weeks.
I forget that guy's name, because I'm always busy playing as, the Miami Vice guy.
Are you kidding? Really? That's what you play?
That's totally who I play, and I forget his name, too. That's all I'm blanking on.
I always play Coach.
Because I'm trying to, I'm just filling it with, character names from the first Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
And
which, have you played The Sacrifice yet? The downloadable part that can be played for Left 4 Dead 1 or 2?
No, is it like a different add-on?
It's an add-on for either game. It's the same downloadable content for either game. If you only own one of them, you can still download it. It is the official bridging of the two.
That's fantastic.
And a player from Left 4 Dead has to stay behind and die so the other ones can escape.
So it's like a portal from one to the other.
In the story mode, here I'm going to give it away because it's been out for a few weeks now. In story mode, it's Bill. The old man.
Really?
Yeah, it's the vet. Because they go into his whole backstory about in Vietnam, how he left his buddies behind, and that's why he's just such this curmudgeon bastard. And when he has the chance to do it right this time, he refuses to let the other survivors die for him, so he stays behind.
Well, of course, as a grizzled old vet does.
Oh my God, and it's so intense. Like, you're trying to put the bridge back up so your boys can get away. And you're fighting off like 5 tanks at once, and they're just pummeling you as you watch the bridge go raise up.
I know that there's like 14% of the audience that really knows what we're talking about right
I'm
now.
I'm just sitting here sad because I ended up like, I only played Left 4 Dead 1. I did not actually have a gaming system.
Well, because you're playing it on the PC, which is just a way to get hosed.
Well, yeah, and then my laptop was just not really good enough. Just a little bit too slow and a little bit too weak to handle it properly. So every once in a while it would just freeze up on me and just like, and I was like, it's great. So I've never been able to actually play it.
Look out, I hear a weir.
Yeah.
No. Shut down.
Now the
good thing about the PC is that Valve does not charge for downloads. For any kind of downloadable content for PC.
As opposed to Microsoft.
Microsoft makes them do it on Xbox.
Yeah, but, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, really, just the, for all that they have given me. I mean, I know that, you know, like, I have my share of problems with Microsoft, but let's be honest. I mean, that Xbox is the thing that tethers me to the outside world now.
Oh, nah, yeah.
I mean, it's not even really my laptop. It really, I mean, the laptop is great. My iPhone, fantastic. The Xbox is the portal through which my wife and I view. That is the oracle that brings the rest of the world to us.
We don't have cable, but we'll be damned if we're ever going to cancel our Xbox Gold membership.
Oh, no. No, it's because, well, and that's when I haven't played Left 4 Dead or Left 4 Dead 2, I guess, for a while, and it's because the Xbox has now become, like, the province solely of my wife. Because because when she discovered that there was a Settlers of Catan game for the Xbox, that's when she just immediately, like, the switch flipped, because she'd been playing Katamari a little bit. And, you know, but she kind of got to the end of the, you know, the Katamari road and, you know, they hadn't put out a new Katamari game for the Xbox. She's like, well, I guess that's it. I've played all the things I could. There's no other games for the Xbox that interest me. And then it was like at that moment she saw a Settlers of Catan game and that was just like the end.
Yeah.
And now she's on this game called Limbo, which is just messed up.
Oh, you Limbo is glorious.
You see the game Limbo. Yeah, sure. I mean, it's all kinds of terrifying and awesome. I strongly urge
yeah, and
Xbox enthusiasts to
do that. It's just all in black and white, but it's silhouette.
Oh, yeah, that's a gorgeous game.
It's a side-scrolling game done in silhouette that manages to be exquisitely beautiful and wonderfully terrifying at the same time. So I just received a communique from Tony, he of the Candy Corn. So he is, I believe, en route to the studio. In just a few, we will count down the top five scariest video games, the five scariest video games in the opinion of Mr. Aaron Duran. In the meantime, in between time, at the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Oh, we have a religious nutcase watch.
Fantastic. Here is your religious nutcase watch for Friday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Here's your religious nutcase watch for Friday. It's Don Taylor.
Oklahoma voters may be unemployed and may even be losing their homes, but at least they won't have to worry about being tried in Islamic court if a ballot measure to outlaw Sharia law passes next week. There's no recorded case of Islamic Sharia law ever appearing in Oklahoma, but backers of the measure urge vigilance. Oklahoma does not have that problem yet, said Republican State Representative Rex Duncan.
I love the yet. The yet, which is always that's preceded by ellipses. And that is sort of that's like at the end of the horror film when Barbara Steele tries to tell you that, you know, the piranha aren't coming to this part of the world yet. And then it just, you know, cuts to the bubbling Red Seas.
Yes, he co-wrote the measure. He says they don't have the problem yet, but why wait till it's in the courts? State Senator Anthony Sykes co-sponsored the measure. He says Sharia is a threat in his state.
I say that fear is real if you've got a judge who would even consider using Sharia law in a state court.
You know, even if I were a zany morning DJ, again, there's just no way that I can. I'm trying to figure if I could do like a my Sharia.
I was just
thinking
that, too.
Yeah, see, it doesn't really work. No.
In Europe, Muslims can choose to hash out divorce and custody cases in Sharia courts. Other cases remain the province of secular jurisprudence, but advocates of the amendment say the European situation is a cautionary tale. The measure, known as State Question 755, had the support of 49% of Oklahoma voters back in July. No recent polling data is available, but last week the group Act for America, which trumpets its crusade against radical Islam, launched an advertising campaign to support the amendment.
I'm sure the use of the word crusade is a coincidence. That's just happenstance.
The president of the American Muslim Association in Oklahoma City, Salim Qureshi, thinks he knows what's behind the measure.
I'm sorry, is that, do you have a little,
Sharia 2,
where is Sharia 2?
Just fear-mongering, it's nothing. What Sharia law has to do in Oklahoma? What Sharia law has to do in Oklahoma?
He said, shoving his face against the microphone and moving it back and forth briskly.
I like him, what Sharia law have to
just
do in Oklahoma?
It's nothing. What Sharia law has to do in Oklahoma? What Sharia law has to do?
What is he doing there at the end?
He's laughing, though.
Is he selling a sack of nuts or something? All right.
I do like, though, that the actual Muslim guy is just laughing at them.
What is up with you? You're crazy. Here's the thing about this. This is why this story is great. This is a little bit of a Rorschach story. Or a story that you believe is two black faces kissing, then you realize it's actually the silhouette of a white candle, and then your mind turns inside out. This story actually works on both sides of the equation for religious nutcasery. The reason that this actually even came to the courts was because last year in New Jersey, this is totally true. This is what they call a checkable fact. Last year in New Jersey, a Muslim woman went to court to try to get a restraining order because the husband was at home giving her a bunch of fives, just teaching her what for with Mr. Fist. And so she's like, you got to give me a restraining order. My husband's beating me senseless. And so the husband, his whole defense was like, no, I'm following Sharia law. Muslim says to beat away. Come on. And the judge went, well, okay. And so this judge in New Jersey, it was one of those things that was just like so astoundingly dumb that it actually sort of like your brain has to kind of go into a slower gear to sort of assess it, where the judge actually just refused to grant the restraining order because he was following Sharia law. The best part, though, is that is in New Jersey, which is not even remotely close to Oklahoma, where they view it as like a sort of a – I think they view it as a sort of like a fire ant thing, that it's going to start, but like it'll hit you right on a crate of oranges to Oklahoma and there, you know, to poison the well or something. So there you go. That is your religious nutcase watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Oh, I'm sorry. Is this Tony? Hello, Tony.
Yes, it is.
Are you here with the candy corn delivery, sir?
Yeah, I'm at the 1001 door.
Fantastic. So bring the deli. What is it? Is he going to have to? Have you tried to buzz in, my friend?
No.
Okay, so there's a buzzer out front. If you want to just give it a buzz. And see if that opens. If not, we'll send somebody. Aaron,
Do you want to send the Mexican down?
Yes. I'm going to send a brown person down to let you in, sir. All right. And if there's anything else you need done while he's down there, you just feel free.
It's our
gift to you. All right, there you go. That's it. Would you be good enough
dishes,
to let
maybe?
Tony in? You said that, not me.
I know.
All right, and so he will arrive here in the studio momentarily with the candy corn, which... Now, and this is, you said the candy corn from Jelly Belly.
Yeah.
It's the same parent company as the that made the candy corn that you had tried.
Right. Yes. They are one of the first two companies, maybe the second company to ever make candy corn in the United States. And they still make it. And it's the first candy corn and only candy corn I have ever had that I liked. And it is quite delicious.
Fantastic.
I'm hoping I haven't oversold it, that you're going to taste it and go, yeah, that's candy corn.
Well, here's the thing is that I'm a candy corn. I mean, it's not like I'm a freak for it or anything. I mean, I basically just have it. Here's what I have. I have candy corn when Halloween comes around, and specifically the little pumpkin-y kind, which is candy corn. It's just a different shape. It's not, I guess it's a candy pumpkin, but it's the same substance.
Technically, in the candy industry, that is the what it's made of. The substance is referred to as mellow cream.
Mellow cream. And is the candy pumpkin... Now, you may have told me this the other day.
It's the same substance as candy
corn. It is the same substance, mm-hmm. So it's not different. So maybe this is just like I'm projecting, because it seems like they have a different taste to some degree. It seems like one has a slightly different... Maybe not even a taste, maybe a different texture.
I think the pumpkins and the candy corns have different textures purely because of how different they are in size. Because the pumpkins are thicker because they're round.
There's a little bit of almost like a waxy kind of a thing though that happens with the candy corn.
Yes.
That doesn't happen with the other candies.
Maybe. Well, yeah, with the pumpkins though, you will still have that waxy thing around the outside. They just seem squishier in the middle, I think, because they are thicker.
All right.
So. All right. And again, the really super waxy candy corn never liked it. So that's why I actually like this candy corn.
I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be is a thing that I'm anticipating with breath that is bated.
Mm.
Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Well, let's do our taser watch before we dig into the candy corn.
Awesome. Here is your taser watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program. You got me running, going out of my mind.
I can't do it, bro.
You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time.
Don't taste me, bro.
Fantastic. Here is your taser watch for Friday. This is Don Taylor.
A county board has overturned the dismissal of a deputy fired earlier this year after using a taser on a frog. Internal investigation records show Deputy Raul Alvarado, 34, told witnesses he kicked the frog multiple times, painted it with whiteout, and stunned it with a taser because he was bored at work in August of 2009.
So it's not like the frog was asking for it. It wasn't like the frog had information he really needed to know.
No. Alvarado did allegedly say, though, that the frog was, quote, taking it like a champ.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. That's a laugh that I tried to suck back in as soon as it happened, because you shouldn't be tasing a frog.
No.
You know, or, I mean, that's...
But I do like the idea of the frog giving back some attitude, like, that the best you got?
It's all you have.
Like he's Rocky Balboa in Rocky III. Just come on, you ain't so bad.
Sort of like the frog is in payback, you know, just tied to a chair.
The deputy was terminated April 30th after sheriff's investigators determined he lied about the incident, violated codes of conduct, and misused county equipment. There's absolutely no doubt that Deputy Alvarado lied in this case, said the county's Merit System Commissioner, Tim Gaffney. He said, as far as bringing him back, the sheriff has no intentions and is in the process of appealing the Merit Board's decision. Internal investigation records show another deputy found Alvarado sitting in a cubicle, the frog lying in a box top early in August 2nd, 2009, at department headquarters can't remember what state this is, probably Florida. Alvarado told him he found the frog in a parking lot and decided to bring it inside. The deputy told investigators he watched Alvarado apply the taser at least once, causing the frog's legs to shoot out. An internal investigation was launched after a female dispatcher filed a complaint with her supervisor.
By the way, this is well-covered territory on the show by now, but I've talked a lot about how tasers seem to have, like, a negligible effect. I mean, I'm like a 200-pound person, and the fact that they were actually tasing a frog, which is, you know, smaller, and that the frog, quote, took it like a champ, end quote, indicates that maybe there really is no consistency in terms of the taser efficacy and voltage.
Well, when the female dispatcher filed the complaint, by the way, Alvarado denied the accusations, but said
the frog's lying, sir.
But he said he told the dispatcher he was going to take the frog into the desert to perform a sex act on it, just to rile her.
To rile who? The frog? Or to rile
no, the dispatcher who filed the complaint.
This has got to be Florida. There's no way this isn't a Florida story. Okay. Is there a picture of anyone involved? The frog, the guy, the
probably.
The building?
He says desert, though, so it's probably not Florida. Alvarado also admitted to firing the taser 10 to 15 times that morning. He said he was only testing it, however, because it hadn't been working properly.
Wow. That's the best taser watch we've had in quite some time. I think the last time we had this is the best one we've had since that chick that stole five cars in a row or something and then set something on fire and ran into the shrubs in Utah and vanished while nude or whatever. This is right up there. The best part is that he doesn't actually say whether the frog was dead, implying that the frog actually is still just, you know, battered but unbowed.
He took it like a champ.
Yeah. You know, I mean, at that point, you pretty much have to, like, the frog has to join with you. You know, it's sort of like when Keith David and Roddy Piper are punching each other and they live. Eventually, they have to join up forces.
They have to team up. Maybe they're going to go on the road and get into adventures together.
Solve crimes around the world.
Yeah.
Isn't that right, frog? Rap. You know, and the end. All right.
Maybe he's got electrical powers now or something.
This is the frog's origin story.
Yeah.
Yeah, the frog now has laser eyes.
Hey, by the way, just in case you're joining us right now, the world is goddamned insane. There's your taser watch. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It is Friday, October 29th, 2010. We're here with Mr. Aaron Duran. Just a few. We will do the day's top five. Top five scariest video games. Top five scariest, most unnerving, most fear-inducing, and altogether unsettling and disturbing video game experiences. How long did it take you to put the list together?
The list probably took me a few hours to put together.
All right.
Yeah.
So we'll get that here in a few. We'll also announce the winners of our Geek-O-Lantern contest, which was not easy.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah. I mean...
No, that was not easy.
As River Phoenix would say, it's not easy what we do here. It's just... I mean, it really is... It just became this. I mean, I won't say that we regret it, but I think it was way harder than we thought it was going to be because it just comes down to being a game of inches because they're all. This is like a thing your mom normally says, but it's a lie when she says it. Where you go, I love you all equally in different ways.
And there was a lot of discussion and argument and justification and back and forth about qualifications and betterness and yeah, it was kind of hard.
And we actually, and I should say this, it was you know, Dawn and Cheryl and myself, and then we actually broadened it a little bit, and we threw it out to some of our the people in the Rick Emerson Show orbit, just saying, hey, so what do you think of this? Give us your take on, you know, on how you would rank all of these. And there was somebody who shall remain nameless who sent back. It was like a 12-paragraph thing about, like, the strictures and the standards and the criteria by why which these were to be judged. What was a jack-o'-lantern and what was not a jack-o'-lantern? And what was an American jack-o'-lantern versus a European jack-o'-lantern? And, I mean, it just became, like, unbelievably mind-bendingly complex, but in a sort of great way. Like, it is the kind of molehill into mountain dynamic that is the leitmotif of this program. Let's welcome out of the Rick Emerson Show listener, Tony. Hello, sir.
Hello.
I'm sorry, let me get that turned up. Hi, how are you?
I am good.
Are you wearing a rugby shirt from the Death Star?
Yeah, this is a new pseudo jersey that Adidas put out. It's basically put together like a European soccer jersey.
Yeah.
As if the
Empire.
Yeah, there's an Empire Athletics patch.
Yeah, little TIE fighter on there, 77. Why would it be 77?
Did you get
Aaron Duran?
That's when Star Wars came out.
Yeah.
Did you... let me ask you this.
Like, duh.
Yeah. I was like, wait, am I being challenged on that?
No, not a challenge at
all. Is this a thing that the general public can buy?
Yeah, Adidas has a whole Star Wars line now.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not like a thing you have to know a guy who knows a guy like inside.
There's
of Adidas
a counter in. Jedi version of this as well that's like a blue.
Yeah. You can also get some, like, you can get a Boba Fett tracksuit that looks like you're dressed in Mandalorian armor.
Damn you, George Lucas.
Is that where that R2-D2 bathing suit came from? Because I just showed that to Rick the other day.
Yeah,
there might be a certain Cable Hashitani that drives around in a Boba Fett tracksuit with the Boba Fett backpack and a helmet that he's redone into Boba Fett's helmet. And it looks awesome.
Okay. if I can ask this, if this is an untoward question, how much could I expect to pay for that jersey?
I think they're $65.
That's a giveaway. I mean, really, the more I buy, the more I save at that price. You know, goddamn, mother effing George Lucas. I was just, wasn't it just yesterday where I'm like, screw him, I'm done.
Because
he was like making like the final three films.
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen.
Or whatever. And then he's like releasing all of the others in 3D and then on Blu-ray and then whatever the format is at that moment. He's had the last of my, he won't be getting any more coins from me. And then it's like you walk in with the coolest thing. I don't even care about rugby.
Yeah.
You know, and I claim not to care about Star Wars any longer. And yet I look at that.
You can't help it. It's in your DNA. Yeah,
it's awesome.
It's a great logo. The whole
Death Star Communications.
Yeah.
I gotta get you a picture of that before you take off. All right. So you emailed. I guess it was maybe yesterday, 2 days ago, something like that about candy corn.
Yeah.
Dawn have been talking about. We just discussed this, but Dawn been talking about candy corn. How she's not really partial to it. But then you had a kind. Where did you have the special candy corn?
There was a candy store in St. Helens when I worked in St. Helens, and I used to go there because they had a whole espresso bar thing too, and that's where I went to escape from my horrible, horrible job.
So this wasn't recently.
No. All right. But the thing is, every year they would get really excited when candy corn season came around because they were getting this candy corn, and I was like, I don't like candy corn. They said, you have to try this candy. I was like, but it's from Gerlitz, the company that makes Jelly Bellies. And it turns out they're one of the very first companies to ever make candy corn. And they were right. It was delicious.
And so we were talking about this, and then Tony emailed with a photo, actually, of said box of candy corn.
The bright candy-like box.
Now, had you purchased this? Like already, or is it like did you buy it after hearing Dawn talk about this?
No, it was after hearing Dawn talk about it, and you were hypothesizing that I think it was Jelly Belly. And so as I was listening to it, I went, well, let's find out. And so I looked it up, and on the website you could actually order, and it was Jelly Belly. You could order directly from them. And I went, oh, well, that looks fun. I'm going to order that just for giggles. And so,
excellent. How long did it take to arrive?
It was less than a week. It was pretty quick.
You know, that's the thing about the internet is like you can go from normal to just weighing 1,000 pounds and having a thrombosis within like a month.
There's never been a better time in history to be a shut-in.
That's
you don't ever have to leave your house and you can just get everything sent to
and
you.
And in this scenario, I was at home in front of my computer
awesome.
As I was listening to the show.
No pants at all.
Oh, man.
That is fantastic. All right. So, I guess we should try some of
we
this.
We should.
So this is like a box like you would see at a sort of candy store, which is, you know, it's like the not labeled for individual sale or whatever.
So this is, they're actually
several bags of it.
Yeah.
Jelly. Right. So they're actually calling this Jelly Belly candy corn. So.
All right. And so,
I'm not taking any of this home, so enjoy.
So these are not Jelly Belly. These aren't jelly beans. It's just from the Jelly Belly company.
Right.
It is candy corn.
I'm going to try some of Don's first because I'll admit I don't like candy corn. I don't want to open one if I don't like
it. I don't either, and these are pretty good.
Oh, you know what's awesome about this? You know what the serving size is? 30 pieces. They're not doing any of that like serving size one and a half.
Oh, my God. A couple of days ago, we got some boxes of Booberry because it only comes out once a year.
Uh-huh.
You read the back of it, serving size, half a cup.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
This,
without milk.
This candy corn, it's like it's got flavor. It's got like a really, really big flavor. It's still got that candy corn texture, but it's not super waxy like the Brock's or the cheaper ones are.
Sure.
And it's actually there's tiny littlest bit of salt in it, so it makes it
and a hint of butter.
Yes, and it's kind of buttery.
It reminds me
These might be good to melt
that.
Down and then make popcorn balls out of.
Reminded me of cream cheese frosting.
Yeah.
The salt. Here's the thing. I can taste the salt, and you would think it would not work. It would clash. But it actually...
No, it just serves to make it all the more addictive.
Now, what is the deal with that? What does the salt do? Because, you know, sometimes salt will be in candy. People go, well, why?
Salt, well, first of all, salt helps boost just the flavor in general. And certain things like chocolate in particular, they really, really do well by having chocolate to help boost the taste. But
tell
also,
me more.
It's just a matter of of when you have things that hit all of those different flavor profiles on your tongue. Ugh. You get the sweet, you get the savory, you get the salty, and it just makes it a fuller, richer flavor.
Wow.
Say it again.
Really fantastic.
Aren't these good?
These are good, actually. I wasn't known. I didn't think I like them.
Here's the thing. I feel like a jackass. I would be giving you bugles right now, except I think we actually – I think that Brock has taken all of the bugles home with him.
These would be good with bugles.
See, now we're doing – this is like twice in one day. It's that thing where like the listener arrives with like some gift for us.
Nothing.
Some sort of like an edible frankincense, basically, and I have nothing to give you.
This is my gift back to you for 11 years of entertainment.
Well, thank
I started listening in the He's Back KOTK days, and so
– I appreciate that.
I was excited to bring them in.
Thank you. It means it's so hard to sound sincere as I'm just like shoving.
Thank you so much. No, really. No, you're the best.
I'd be thanking you, but I'm too busy eating.
Oh, man.
I just sound like Mr. Creosote.
Honestly, for something like this to go from me actually hating candy corn to just having these and going, oh, this is so good. I mean, this is great candy corn.
You put the candy corn on the table?
Now, oh, you know, no. She was. Can
you
I just tell you
what happens on that table?
Oh, don't tell him what I
can
did.
Can I just tell you, Dawn needed some Vicodin earlier this morning, and she didn't want to wait for it to kick in because it's time release, and so she just smashed it into a powder. I swear to God, into a powder, and then like was like racking it out into lines basically, and then put it into a cap. You know, which is like the last time I saw it. You know, I mean, that's just like you're in like full on Connolly Leto territory there. But she like then scraped into a cap. And then just took the entire time-release Vicodin in one non-time-release, get it all at the same moment shot out of a cap. Okay, but she did it all on the table.
See, that's where it gets weird. How come you don't have the two spoons you carry with you at all times? He says, not once thinking that that should be the tablespoon and the teaspoon.
Yeah.
And then you dip it, you give it a quick little stir, and...
Well, I hadn't really been anticipating that I would need to do that, but it just I had the sinus headache and I wasn't feeling very good, and I was like, "Screw it!"
Justify to us, baby.
I mean, I'm jacked up on Vicodin.
Okay.
Oh, candy corn. Thank you, Tony.
I love this show. No, seriously, and I speak for all of us. I really do mean sincerely. Thank you so much for listening and for being a longtime listener as well. Because it really is the only reason that we're able to kind of. It's really the only reason that we're able to sit here and eat candy corn as though it were a real job, like as though it's anything that my guidance counselor would ever have foreseen in my life. So it means a great deal.
All year.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, listener Tony, awesome. Tell you what, we'll do just one quick break here. We'll come back. We'll do top five with Aaron Duran. We'll announce the... But I'm just going to go home and just take off. I'm just going to sit around pantless and eat. We'll do the top five. We'll have the winners of the Geek-O-Lantern contest and all that, plus the Fun Employment guys will be in here recording their fine program here in just a skosh. Hang tight. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Nightmare, yeah.
Wow. All right. It is the, and this is like a chaser to that half a box of Quaker granola that I had last night with extra brown sugar and chocolate chips.
And there's like 8 more bags of candy corn in this box. There's candy corn for like months.
See, this is the thing you kind of forget every, especially when you're no longer a kid, you forget this about Halloween. There's that whole like, oh, candy, it's awesome,
Yeah.
And suddenly you feel like you're just like you got a stomach full of Geeker.
And you feel that way a lot faster as an adult than you did. Now it's like you eat like, you know, like in this case, I was just saying, I got like, there's 2 servings in one of these bags of candy corn, and I ate like half the bag, which is 1 serving, and I'm already like, too much sugar.
But you can't put them away.
No.
Yes, I can, because I'm going to drink my Vizo and just put it aside for later.
So we want to thank listener Tony for bringing those on by. We want to thank listener Tony, part of the best audience ever.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't forget the Blood and Guts Bash happens tonight. That is tonight, the 29th at the Baghdad. No cover, but you got to be 21 and over. It's the night of a Japanese animation as well as a special screening of The Vampire Diaries. Don Taylor and myself will be there. That is 9 to midnight at the Baghdad. In just one moment, we will do today's top 5. I should say that if you are listening to this program and you find it amusing, or perhaps given the amount of food that we've ingested today, if you're getting a sort of sympathy sickness, all of these things, the many colors of Benetton that make up the Rick Emerson program are brought to you by fine business partners, including CJ's High Climbing Services. That is CJ's High Climbing Services. Find out more about them at CJ'sHighClimbing.com, or you can call 503-228-9278. That's 503-228-9278. And a lot of people have found, you and I have actually shared this, that, when you're owning as opposed to renting, like the thing when you rent is like there's always a guy you can call for that. You know, is the toilet that doesn't work, or like your ceiling collapses, or just, you know, gunk on your roof. You just pick up the phone, you call a guy because you're paying the rent until he's got to show up. You get into a house, and it's like, I remember my dad lamenting about this. You get into a house and suddenly it's like, God damn it, I got to fix all this crap myself.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Yeah. And it just becomes this, it just becomes this thing that you have to deal with. And, you know, and maybe you know how, maybe you don't, but maybe you just don't have time. Maybe it's a mess. Maybe it's a pain. And it seems like a lot of the things that are the most difficult to do are also the things you have to do when the weather outside is the most unpleasant. So it's either like 112 degrees as you're trying to put insulation in the attic for the upcoming winter, or, you know, there's like gale force winds and it's 39 degrees outside while you're trying to get moss off your roof because it's slowly prying apart the shingles of your home as though it's trying to get in and attack your family while they sleep and eat their bones. So I'm just saying you don't want to deal with that, what with the bone eating and all. 503-228-9278 is how you get hold of CJ's High Climbing Services. 503-228-9278 or CJ's HighClimbing.com. They will come on out to your place to give you a free estimate, by the way, most of the time using Google Earth, and they're going to invoice you after the fact. It means you don't have to take time off from work to actually be there, because that's just pointless. You take time off from work and then you can't do anything. You just sit there and watch a guy climbing a ladder 100 times.
Seriously, Aaron, they will give you an estimate based on looking at your house on Google Earth.
I was going to say, yeah. Is that what they use Google Earth for? Because that sounds righteous.
It is. No, it's fantastic. Because normally it's like, how much is it going to cost me? They go, well, I don't know, sir. We got to get you an estimate. And then it's, when can you do that? Next Wednesday?
I grew up in a region like that. I grew up in, a high, mountain forest where you had to have, the tops of trees felled or whatever. And the guy would show up and be like, well, I don't know. I'll have to get up there and estimate it. That'll cost you, too.
I got to go back to the shops. So they can actually look on Google Earth and they can find out, more or less what it's going to cost.
Cool.
And then, of course, if they get out there and they find that it's somewhat different, they contact you before they do anything. So you don't end up paying for something you didn't think you were going to need. And they invoice you after the fact, which means you don't have to be necessarily around. You don't have to cut out time from your busy day when they're actually doing the work. So you can find out more about it by going to CJ's High Climbing. That is CJ'sHighClimbing.com. Or if you want, you can call them as well. It's 503-228-9278. All right, shall we do today's top 5?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here's your top 5 for Friday.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire!
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
Ladies and gentlemen, Aaron Duran has put together a list of the top 5 scariest video games. The top 5 most fear-inducing video games. For your Friday before Halloween. Don Taylor, let's count these down, starting with honorable mention. What is that honorable mention?
That would be Doom.
We're talking the
more
original
specifically
Doom?
Doom 3 from id Software.
Oh, Doom 3.
Well, the entire Doom trilogy really counts.
Yeah. Imagine there was a time where if you just suggested a game could scare you, people would just laugh their head off at you. Doom 3 makes the list. It's only the honorable mention to me because while it does have its frightening moments, they all feel like kind of just jump scares. You're going down in the dark and it's, that's kind of it. And then you move on to the next kill. But they did create a fantastic atmosphere in Doom 3. It's just wrong.
That is all about, people cannot overestimate. You can't overstate the influence of id Software and of John Carmack specifically, the guy who really is the man behind Doom and all of, and Doom, Quake, Hex, and all of those games that came out of id. I mean, it's really, there's a fantastic book called Masters of Doom, which is about the rise of the company and then the eventual split between John Carmack and John Romero. The guys at Doom, have we all seen The Social Network here?
Oh, yeah.
It's like that scene where there's just the guys at the house with the 50-foot bong and just, like, things exploding and the brick chimneys collapsing and meanwhile the guy's coding. The early id sessions were all like that because they were all just living in some house of dudes coding, like, for 9 days in a row.
Coding, drawing horrific-looking comics, and then playing D&D.
Yeah,
and that was it.
And, I mean, really, and just one of those things where there was it. The reason that Doom is so great is because they were such a small company, there was no one to tell them no. And so you had, like, there's this guy, Adrian Carmack, who was the graphic designer. And he came to work one day and he'd gnarled his leg up on a skateboard. He'd had a skateboard accident. He'd fallen down a hill or something. And he was like, hey, look at this. Look at my leg. It's all messed up. And he was already, like, warped anyway because his mom was a coroner or something and had taken him to work a lot when he was a kid.
He said he used to just sit in the corner and sketch his mom working.
And, and so they said, well, that's a horrific injury you've got there. And he went, hold on a second. And he scanned his leg with, like, the computer scanner. He just put the wound on it and then used that to texture the insides of Doom. So, like, a lot of the rooms are scans of an actual wound on Adrian Carmack's leg. And plus, you know, it's hard to remember this now, but if you go back and play the original Doom, even though it seems very, very basic and simple, it's like rocks and twigs, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
At the time, it was terrifying. It was terrifying because there was nothing had ever been made that was like that game. Not really. Not to that
Not
level.
Not really, no. I mean, the,
yeah, like Wolfenstein 3D or whatever.
Yeah, that
but
one kind of got passed up anyway. And Doom was one of those
It was a game changer, so to speak.
Totally. It was like, the Mortal Kombat of its kind of genre.
Yeah.
Because gamers loved it. Parents and political groups despised it.
And it's so funny now to see them. They were so upset about Doom, the original, you know, that it was like the worst game in the history of the world. And, you know, and it's like before Grand Theft Auto had you getting points for raping hookers by the side of the road. I mean, Jesus.
I didn't mean to laugh so much at that.
No, it's who hasn't done it and chortled with one's pals?
Gotta get that money back.
I need more piano wire. But Doom 3 is actually is probably the only game I have ever quit playing because it was too scary. I have never finished it this day. I would play it and I was like, F this, I'm done. It's not relaxing or fun. These are the top 5 scariest video games of all time. Don Taylor, what is number 5?
Number 5 is Fatal Frame.
And I don't think I know Fatal Frame.
Fatal Frame is put out by Konami. They haven't done it in a long time. Fatal Frame was probably the apex of the Japanese horror-influenced video games. You know, kind of, you know, the little girl with the long hair just going into the creepy house. Fatal Frame, the whole premise of Fatal Frame is that they never really go into it, into why, but you are forced to explore what is essentially a massive haunted town. The entire town is filled with the dead. But you don't really have any weapons. The best you can do are take pictures of them to capture the souls of the dead. What's messed up about it, though, is that you don't really ever see the spirits until you're looking through the lens of the camera.
Oh.
So it's a third-person game as you're walking around, on this creepy, just bad light. Not bad, but great lighting effects, this really just monotonous ambient music. And then it was one of the first games to really take into effect early surround sound in video games. So in the background, you hear on the left-hand side, so you'd spin around hoping there was something there, and the only way to find out is to lift your camera, and then it goes into a first-person mode, and you've got this ghost right in front of you, just, and you have to take pictures of it to absorb it to keep moving on through the rest of the game.
That's just wrong. I mean, that's like back to the Doom 3
thing. You have no
thing.
Weapons. That's it. You cannot fight back.
You know that when they come up with a little something like that, too, they just giggle. Like, this will F those guys up.
Yeah.
Like, they had this in Doom 3, there was this sort of thing which was really divisive and became kind of irritating, but they decided that somehow you couldn't hold the gun and the flashlight at the same time. You could hold one or the other.
That was always fun.
Because you couldn't find duct tape, I guess, like on Mars. And so you could either hold, you know, the gun, or you could, you know, you could either have the gun to protect you from the thing, or you could have something that would allow you to see the thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was no right answer. And that's one of those gags like this of using the camera, and that's and then they just fill the frame probably, and you just, you know, piss yourself.
Oh, yeah, no, it was horrific. And it just worked perfectly.
Jesus.
So, yeah, Fatal Frame.
These are the five scariest video games in the opinion of Aaron Duran. Number four, Don Taylor.
Number four is Silent Hill 2.
Yeah.
Silent Hill is the first video game that I watched that I think really genuinely scared me.
Yeah.
Because I played some that were creepy and were a little scary, and there were some startly things in some of the games I played. Silent Hill was the first one where I think that the music and the sound effects and everything worked to just creep me out to the point where it's like, I'm unhappy that I'm playing this. Dear God.
And it's funny is that people that don't know the game, if they hear this music, it just sounds like the end credits to like some, you know, 8 o'clock teen drama series.
Right.
But people that have played Silent Hill, when they hear that guitar, they know, they're like, oh no, this is not right. Silent Hill, done by Konami. Silent Hill's not all those games, you're just an everyday guy. You're not an army guy. You're not a cop. So if you run for too long in Silent Hill, you stop and go out of breath. You have to stop running. The game will make you stop running, and you'll stand there in the middle of the street of the house going, while these things are coming at you. This was also one of the first games that would take the mundane world and then use the great and horrifying sound effect of either the crackling radio or the air raid alarm, which was the signal that the world was about to change. In Silent Hill, it went from the regular world to just this demon world where the setting didn't change, it just kind of gored it up a little bit. So say you're walking through, you know, the children's wing of the hospital, and you hear the walls begin to shift, and now you have just little spiritual zombie babies that are giggling as they're crawling past you.
Well, that's
Silent Hill is not a pleasant game. Silent Hill is also the first game I remember people wanting to watch someone play it.
Right.
You wanted to you didn't want to play it because it was horrifying.
It's so cinematic. I mean, that's you know, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like watching a really, really well-done, suspenseful film.
Right, yeah.
And it has, the other thing about Silent Hill is it's got that kind of beautifully decayed thing going on. You know, like a...
Silent Hill makes you is what you think Trent Reznor's living room looks like.
Totally. And there's like three of them, right? Isn't that the...
There's a lot now. They've kind of diluted the franchise. I mean, maybe one day they'll go back and revisit it. A fun little note, the first Silent Hill was basically designed by a couple of guys that locked themselves in their room for months on end and then said, we've made this game, what do you think? Just the mind that
like
would have created...
unleashed it on the world.
Yeah, normally games are made by entire committees, and you've got one guy doing this, one guy doing that. Just these two creepy guys that did the sound, wrote the story, came up with the concept, the eviscerations, whatever. And
busy scratching themselves.
Here's the game. Anybody want to buy it, you know?
I'm covered in sores. Who wants my game?
Yeah, pretty much.
These are the five scariest video games, according to Aaron Duran. Don Taylor, number three.
Number three, Left 4 Dead 2.
I might get some grief for putting Left 4 Dead, any of the series on here. And I want to be really specific on number three. Left 4 Dead 2, this is the music for the Hard Rain campaign.
Right.
Which messes me up. Mainly because in the Hard Rain campaign, the whole point is that you're going through, you know, New Orleans. It's post-Katrina. And Left 4 Dead 2 makes great use of weather mapping effects. And in Hard Rain, when the rain comes down, you're blinded.
Yeah, your vision gets all blurry and you can't
see
anything. Yeah.
If you're running against the wind is constantly shifting, you feel your character slow down. You're running through sugarcane fields, through broken sugar factories, up to your waist in water with this creepy banjo playing in the background the whole time.
Yeah. It really is amazingly atmospheric. And the best thing about the Left 4 Dead series, the best decision they ever made, because it allowed them to do so many things, was to frame it as you're not playing a zombie game, you're playing a character in a zombie movie.
Yeah.
Because that lets them get away with things that would be corny or cliche or try like the big dramatic music that happens. Like whenever the zombies are about to attack, you know, the infected are going to run you, you hear the like dun, 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 dun,
yeah,
dun,
totally.
Dun. And that would be like in a regular video game, you'd be like, well, there's this corny music, but because it's a movie, you totally accept it. And it lets them just, it gives them access to this like place in your psyche that is a little unguarded.
The camera angles, especially in Hard Rain, they're all shot, you know, like it's in a movie. During certain scenes when they want your character to look up, the game takes over and just makes you look up. And, you'll see trees toppling down in front of you. And again, Left 4 Dead 2, especially the Hard Rain campaign, has this randomizer where you can't memorize the path anymore.
Right.
I mean, you got to get to one certain spot, but sometimes you know, you've got to go around a mobile home park. You've got to go this way through the sugar factory. And just, it's that damn weather and that music.
Is Hard Rain the campaign, too, where you're going through a roadhouse and there's the jukebox that plays Your Brains by kind of thing?
That one's just called The Parish. But just it's the, in the same
right.
game, though,
okay.
yeah.
Yeah. That was the thing when that brain, when the game just broke my mind in half. when I was in like a bar, it was like a sort of a juke joint kind of a place. And it's like, you know, there's a jukebox playing in the corner. It's just like twanging away at some whatever. And it's like your zombies are, you know, coming, you know, in dribs and drabs. And I'm kind of shooting them down or whatever.
And you hear the record go.
Yeah. And then, at a certain point, I hear the. And then I hear that, hey, Tom, it's Bob. And I was like staring at the jukebox going, are you effing kidding me? It's playing Your Brains by Jonathan Colton. And then like the zombies just appear like
by the
thousands. And it was the most surreal moment where I felt like I was in heaven and hell at the same time, where I have this machine gun and I am firing at zombies that are just like attacking me by the dozens while Jonathan Colton is blaring away in the background. And I was just thinking like, have I gone insane? Like,
yeah.
have I? It was just the weirdest moment.
The Left 4 Dead games are definitely the most light. Hearted out of all the whole quote horror games on this list, but the reason why I want to put up here and even so high is that people that aren't into zombies, the people that are unnerved by zombie stuff, can't watch someone play this game.
Yeah,
my wife cannot watch. If she hears Left 4 Dead, she leaves the room
because it's creepy.
She just can't. She's like, I can't watch this unless you want me to sleep with the light on, the Muppets in the background all night. I can't watch you play this.
These are the five scariest video games of all time. Aaron Duran has put this together. Don Taylor, what is number two?
Number two is Resident Evil.
Yeah. Number two, specifically the original Resident Evil. Again, as the game progressed, they deviated from, you know, the core of what made the game so great. And Resident Evil has definitely become more and more action-oriented as the series progressed. But in much like the way Doom kind of changed the first-person shooter, Resident Evil, there would be no survival horror genre.
They created
it with Resident Evil. And again, it was, you know, the simple presence. You're a cop. You have to go investigate a series of murders in a house. And at first, it's just a couple of zombies, and you put them down. And it goes more and more into, you know, lab experiments and viruses, you know, affecting your players. It was just this great mix of high tech and complete and utter horrifying atmosphere.
And you just felt, yeah, you felt like the desolation of, like, you're in an empty house, and yet you're not alone.
Yeah, you knew you weren't alone. You had very limited bullets. This was another big deviation from any game previously to this, is that you couldn't just unload on something
right.
thinking, I'll just mow it down and I'll reload. There was a finite number of bullets in the entire game. And if you used them all up, then it was just you and the knife.
And it was the house itself as a character in the sense that it's like all the atmosphere. It reminds me a lot, I mean not a lot, but it reminds me to some degree of a game I played when I was very young, a game called Impossible Mission, which... It was sort of I don't even remember really what the premise of the game was, except that you were trapped in like a big mansion being run by a mad scientist or something. But there were just these sequences where you would be running down a hallway and it was just empty, and you had like hardwood floors, and you would run, and it almost sounded like you were running in tap shoes, these loud claps
right.
as you were, and it was a loud echoing sort of sound when you ran. And that told you everything, because you knew you were in a big cavernous house all by yourself. Except for the occasional thing that wanted to kill you.
It wanted to kill and eat your face off.
And Resident Evil was the first game to perfect that.
And Resident Evil even took, when it first came out on the PlayStation, took the limitation of the PlayStation, which was known for its horrendously long load times. It would use that to its advantage. When you went into a room you never explored before, you'd just get this door, an image of a door.
Right.
Well, you knew logically in your head that the game was loading. But you were so into the game, you're like, open the door. Just open the door. What's going to happen next? And sometimes it was just another room. Another time, there's something right there waiting for you.
Jesus. All right, these are the five scariest video games of all time. Don Taylor, what is number one?
Game. Number one, Eternal Darkness.
This is the most effed up game.
A yawning chasm filled with emptiness and the puerile meanderings of...
Have you ever played this game, Don?
No, I never have.
Not many people did. That's what sucks.
Here's the thing about this game. And Aaron will probably have way more to say about this than I do, but it's interesting to note, this is why Nintendo is so brilliant. They actually have a patent on the technology used for this game, and it's called the sanity meter.
Yeah.
And the sanity meter just means that the more that the more fatigued and exhausted and injured and damaged your character becomes, the more your character loses his grip on reality. And so
it's like sanity points and like Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah, but unlike most games where they just kind of have it affect the character, like say maybe you can't run very well anymore. Eternal Darkness does have a spell, a magic system, so say in most games you can't really do your spells properly. The sanity meter in Eternal Darkness affects the player, not the character.
And, like, occasionally the television screen will just freeze, or the sound, there will be, like, a volume control that appears on the screen, and it will just turn down the volume, or it will just say, like, game shutting down.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, no, save, no! And then it'll, like, flash back into the actual game.
Yeah, it'll pixelate out. You'll go to open a door, and the door won't open.
It'll look like a glitch.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird.
And so there are...
Different sound effects will come out of nowhere as your sanity meter drops. The screen begins to tilt. Oh, it's...
Yeah, there's in-game things, like they have in a lot of other games, but it's also... It is meta, like it's extra game things that and things that you have seen happen to video games, like again where it pixelates or it glitches or it freezes or hangs, except you can't tell if it's really happening or if it's because you've just gone insane. I mean, and they knew they were onto something too because they patented that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they've actually used it for much beyond that, but I've seen it replicated in other games, and that's all Nintendo.
Yeah,
they
haven't.
That.
Unfortunately, they haven't used it much after that because the company that designed the game, Silicon Knights. Promptly then went bankrupt about a year after the game went out. They really wanted to do a sequel, and they just... It was business. Bad things happened to Silicon Knights, and they were never able to do a sequel to Eternal Darkness. Eternal Darkness is, even among like non-horror game fans, is considered one of the turning points for Nintendo also, because Eternal Darkness was the first game from Nintendo, put out specifically for Nintendo, for the GameCube, that was targeted at adults.
It was the first, and it was the first game made by Nintendo that had the mature rating.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they had done Mortal Kombat portovers, but this was made for adults. It wasn't. I mean, at the time, the GameCube was nothing but Star Wars games, Mario, some sports games, and Zelda, and they decided we are going to only target adults with this game. And the Eternal Darkness has become just this legendary game. People pay hundreds of dollars for it on eBay to hunt it down now.
It's kind of like GoldenEye in that way, where like it's lived far beyond like its initial period of whatever. So.
Yeah, and it was great. Every level you played a descendant of the main character who's investigating the death of her grandfather, who got into Lovecraftian, texts and was reading like Cthulhu mythos stuff. And at the end of every level, you're reliving a past life. You die at the end of every level in a horrible, terrible, visceral way. And then
God.
You cut to the new stuff to play a new level and die.
It really is, it's quite something. Excellent, well done.
Thank you. I'll go home and play some Eternal Darkness later, too.
Before we wrap this... Jesus. Before we wrap this up, we should take a moment to thank everybody who submitted something for our Geeko Lantern contest. Often we say, like, we're all winners here today. So while we only have, we have the five main slots. We have the four items from ThinkGeek.com, and then we have the $100 gift certificate. And so we have those set aside, and then we have the rest of the entries as well. And I think...
Now how are we going to give out the four other prizes?
I was thinking about that, actually. And we got the $100 gift certificate for first place, and then we got the four items from ThinkGeek. And my take on it, because this seems like the easiest and most intuitive way to do it, is for the second place winner, to have the choice of the four. The third place winner has the choice of the three. Da-da-da-da.
I figured we'd just assign them.
We could do that, too.
And then Aaron could, like, reach into the box and... Do we have the box here?
We have the box here.
Aaron could just pull out something out of the box randomly, and that would be for each person.
Like the rite of manhood in Aboria.
Well, how do you feel? Sure, yeah, just like that. How do you feel about that? Does that sits well within you?
I think that sounds less complicated than individually contacting people and keeping track of
your internal magic eight ball says sources point to yes?
Yes.
All right. So you want to bring that box over?
All right.
We got to wrap this up here because Greg and Sarah are going to be in the tape Fun Employment Radio here in just a skosh. I let them know we were running a hair behind. All right. So before we do anything else, I want to say congratulations again and thank you to everybody who submitted. This is really, and you'll be happy to know that this is like the gallery for all of the Geeko Lantern stuff has been linked to like everywhere. I mean, there's just a huge numbers of pages, including the Think Geek website and Facebook itself have linked to the gallery. So congratulations to everybody. You're all you're awesome and you're fantastic. And I it really is just there astounding.
There wasn't a single one that was just like, seriously, dude, like boo. No, they were all really good.
And it was and I say this again because it was really, really difficult. I mean, to use the cliche again from Swords, it was a game of inches, really. I mean, it was just very, very difficult. So we polled a lot of people and we tried to aggregate, you know, to whatever degree we could, how everybody felt about everything. But again, they were all fantastic. So thank you to everybody who entered the Geek O' Lantern contest. Yeah, y'all rock. All right, so we'll start right out of the gate. First, should we start at the top or should we start at the bottom?
Let's start at the bottom.
All right, we'll start at the bottom.
Which, and actually, to be honest, the bottom, everything that isn't first prize, you're not. It's not really like you're the worst of the five.
No, I mean, really, these
are... Plus, I glance in this box and there's some... Awesome stuff.
Yeah, we had to pick one person to be like the grand prize winner, and the other ones are really just like, and then these other ones are at the top of the heap too.
Co-awesome those two. Yeah, so I mean, yeah, they're just freaking awesome, all of them. So we will start at the bottom in fifth place here. And again, it's all relative, but in fifth place we have Andy, who created the fully functional Linux machine. Andy from the box of Think Geek swag receives what, Aaron Duran?
The Sonic Screwdriver.
The 11th Doctor Sonic Screwdriver.
Excellent. From Doctor Who, the 11th Doctor Sonic Screwdriver. That goes to Andy, creator of the functional Linux pumpkin machine.
I have this. This thing is awesome.
Can you open doors with it? Can you do anything with it?
Yes, you can. Timey, wimey, wimey, hammy. That's right.
Okay.
Some people not that joke.
Fourth place. From listener Michelle, the pumpkin bomb. The pumpkin, which created so much, like... Spider-Man, Batman, Maximum Overdrive, confusion in my mind.
Yeah.
Pumpkin Bomb, created by listener Michelle. Michelle receives...
Oh, sweet. Classic Science Tricorder.
So the fully the fully functional and
fully
operational...
Fully functional original series tricorder.
And real...
From Star Trek.
Absolutely to scale from Star Trek. It is a one-to-one scale creation. Can you hold that up and do one more sound from that?
Yeah, let me see if I can get it again here. Hold me.
Strange. Readings indicate a life form in the vicinity, apparently human.
So there you go. So that is the fully functional Star Trek tricorder that goes to Michelle, creator of the pumpkin bomb. In third place, creator of the R2-D2 sculpture, that is listener Sam. Sam, who created really... this is one of the ones that people... It got so hard to make a distinction between fourth place, second place, third place, because of things like this. The R2-D2 carving, which is just freaking fantastic. Listener Sam gets what, Aaron Duran?
Gets the Doctor Who TARDIS USB hub.
That's the thing we were talking about earlier. That is like the embodiment of the Think Geek product in many ways.
Yes,
I mean, that is so totally representational of the stuff that outfit sells.
What, nerdy and functional.
That's what I'm saying. Second place in the Rick Emerson Show Geek-O-Lantern contest goes to Nicholas, creator of the Iron Giant Jack-O-Lantern, which is, and we should take a moment to point out that it's astoundingly beautiful. It's not just that it's like a great idea and a great concept, and that it's also beautiful. It's not just a good likeness. It's that he knew exactly what kind of look he was going for, that it wasn't just about making it accurate. It was about getting a sort of feel to it, and it really is quite beautiful.
Yeah,
he
captured a scene even from the movie, and just the way the emotion quality.
Nicholas has received what, Aaron Duran?
The Star Trek USB communicator phone.
So this is an internet telephony device that works with Skype, with MSN chat, I believe with Yahoo chat, and it is again, to scale, fully functional Star Trek communicator. Plugs into your machine.
You could use that to call us on Skype.
You could, actually. You could use that to contact the Rick Emerson radio program. So.
I've used one of these before. They do make all the sounds, too.
Is that true?
Boop, 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 when you flip it open. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so, again, as we get ready here to wrap it up, in first place, we want to thank everybody who took part in this. You can see all the entries at geekolantern.com, just like it sounds, geekolantern.com. First place and the winner of a $100 gift certificate to Think Geek. That goes to listener Jason, creator of The Joker. You go take a look over at the Think Geek's page and their Facebook page. Everybody's gone berserk over that thing. So, really, it's astounding.
It is just creepy and disturbing.
Yeah,
I was watching this thing on the Food Network last week. It was like an extreme pumpkin carving thing. You know, it's like where they're making just like these unbelievably complex like haunted houses and one pumpkin eating a bunch of other pumpkins. And you're thinking to yourself, like, nobody can really do that in real life, because they were doing the same thing of carving into the sort of meat of the pumpkin without penetrating
without
into the center.
It, yeah.
And I was like, well, who does that? And then the answer is Jason, among other people. He does that. So he gets the $100 gift certificate to ThinkGeek. So congratulations and thank you to everybody who entered. It was really quite something. It was really phenomenal. So you can see all of these at geekolantern.com. If you are a winner, you'll be contacted sometime in the next couple of days, and we'll hook up how to get you all this whatnot. Aaron Duran, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
We also want to thank listener Tony, who dropped by the candy corn, and listener Brock, who came by, picked up his bugles, brought Don some cash, caffeine, and also gave us a fistful of swag our own selves. So, and thank you to all the listeners out there who really, as many times we say this, really make this whole thing possible. So without y'all, we'd just be sitting at home scratching myself. So we thank you for listening. Have a fantastic Halloween. Don't forget the Blood and Guts Bash tonight, 9 p.m. at the Baghdad. Of course, Walking Dead. Court and Fatboy present Walking Dead, the premiere that is coming up Sunday at the Baghdad. Go to courtandfatboy.com for more details on that. Go to geekinthecity.com for more details on any number
all
of things.
All kinds of stuff. All kinds of horror events happening in the area, and just things you can look forward to in November.
And finally, this coming Sunday, we'll be doing a back-to-back marathon, all the episodes of AZ, the entire series, a marathon back-to-back featuring an interview with Aaron Duran and Jason Crump, creators of that fine zombie-based ongoing radio narrative. So we'll be listening for that. We will end this program right now, and we will get into AZ Episode 5. That is AZ Episode 5 following this program, after which we'll encore Legion of News, this show, and AZ again. And I know the marathon of that on Sunday. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. Thank you for listening. It is Friday, October 29th, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Happy Halloween. We will see you Monday.